thank you very much for talking to us. Roger Gray, former firearms tactical advisor to the Met, firearms consultant. Thank you for your expertise. Appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Well, I'm almost done for another day. Joined in the studio now by John Holmes, who, of course, carried this extraordinary story live on Talk Radio. Listening to your coverage, John, extraordinary times, an extraordinary show yesterday. What are you doing today?
Well, we're staying with it, to be honest with you. So we're dropping the usual programme and
the usual nonsense.
The usual nonsense is dropped in favour of grown-up stuff. It's fair to say. We have, that said, we're going to take slightly different angles. I think we've got David Baddiel coming in to talk about it. Steve Punt, a comedy writer, is going to talk about how difficult it is to engage with satire in situations like this. We've got head of music from a radio station coming to talk to us about how you have to reschedule all the music. And, of course, we'll be keeping you up to date on all the latest developments.
Absolutely. Well, I say fantastic show yesterday, keeping everyone up to date on what was going on in a very, very fast-moving, difficult situation. John Holmes coming up after 1 o'clock. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 10. This is Talk Radio. Stay tuned and keep safe.
Talk Radio.
Join the Talk Nation.
Pick up your phone and Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Taking care of business on Talk Radio with Exporting is great. If you're a small or medium-sized business owner, you can't afford to miss Talk Radio's expert guide to exporting. From market research to resource management, logistics to local lingo, get essential advice on expanding your product or services overseas. Taking care of business on the Paul Ross Full Set Breakfast on Talk Radio. Take the next step towards exporting. Visit great.gov.uk. The demand is out there. You should be too.
The new TradePoint catalogue is out now, with a huge range of trade products and brands at low trade prices. Grab a copy for your van in one of our 290 stores nationwide today. TradePoint. Trade brands. Trade prices. Trade only. TradePoint!
And it's all change in the new season of Formula One on Channel 4. With new rules, faster cars, wider tyres, louder engines, fresh rivalries, quicker laps and closer races.
Race into the unknown. Formula One starts this weekend on Channel 4.
Thanks, Wilbur. At British Gas, we want to celebrate the continued loyalty of our customers, which is why we kept our standard variable tariff unchanged through the winter. Now we're going one step further by extending our price freeze. And that's not the only thing. We're creating a rewards program that saves energy, money, and hassle. If you're not a British Gas customer, visit our homepage to find out more. British Gas, helping you look after your home.
Hi, I've just been to tickets to be checked, and it shows I actually won the top prize on the raffle.
Right, well, congratulations. You have indeed won £1 million.
£1 million? Oh, Syndicate's so happy.
Oh.
Oh, my God. What can I do now?
Mandy is just one of the lucky millionaires made in the Lotto raffle. In every Lotto draw, £1 million must be won. Play makes it possible. Games, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 16 or over.
Right, that's it. This relationship is over.
Eric.
When I think of the money I spent on you. But it was never enough, was it? There was always something else. What was it you had to have last time?
Eric.
A starter motor.
At Van Monster, every van is covered by our price match promise, our unique 5-day money-back guarantee, and includes a 6-month warranty. Terms and conditions apply. Find your perfect work partner at vanmonster.com.
I'm leaving you for a younger van.
Don't miss our trade-exclusive, one-week-only catalogue launch deals, like 10% off all tiling, flooring and Leyland trade paint. See in-store or online for more. Hurry, offers end Sunday 26th of March. TradePoint. Trade brands, trade prices, trade only. TradePoint!
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A new kind of talk radio. We'll get you talking. Talk Radio.
It is at exactly 1 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm John Holmes. It's Thursday and Toby has got the latest news.
Good afternoon. Coming up, IS claims London attack responsibility. Attacker was British born and the Queen sends her condolences.
Talk Radio.
The so-called Islamic State terror group has claimed responsibility for the Westminster terror attack. In a statement through its own news agency, Daesh says the attacker was a soldier of the Islamic State. Sajda Mughal was on the tube when it was bombed in the London terror attack in July 2007. She now works combating Islamic extremism in the UK and insists to Talk Radio the problem is slowly being beaten.
Being involved in this work and travelling the UK, we have moved further. I mean, I work specifically with the Muslim community, and all across the UK I hear families, particularly women and mothers, saying this is a problem, this is an issue, we need to protect our young ones, we need to protect our loved ones, and we need to protect society.
Islamic State's statement comes just hours after the Prime Minister, Theresa May, revealed the man who killed three people was British.
When operational considerations allow, he will be publicly identified. What I can confirm is that the man was British-born and that some years ago he was once investigated by MI5 in relation to concerns about violent extremism.
Her Majesty the Queen has also released a statement today saying her thoughts, prayers and deepest sympathy are with all those who have been affected by the awful violence. Eight people continue to be questioned by police after six addresses were raided across the capital and Birmingham overnight. Some have criticised the government for allowing someone they once investigated with regards to extremism to drop off their radar. But international security expert from the University of Oxford, Dr. Jonathan Leader-Maynard, told Julia Hartley Brewer it's ridiculous to feel that way.
It's close to impossible to prevent any individual that might be potentially considering carrying out attack of this kind. I mean, I think it's important to remember that you know, from what we know, intelligence services do foil a lot of attacks. But of course, it's just impossible to maintain the kind of tabs on every single person that might consider doing something radical or criminal in society and preventing every single one.
And one other news line today, a man will go on trial in September accused of murdering a one-year-old boy and trying to kill a girl of the same age in North London. 33-year-old Bijya Sagar Das is accused of attacking the toddlers at a flat near Finsbury Park on Saturday night. The little girl is still in a critical condition in hospital.
Toby, thank you very much indeed. Have you got weather?
Certainly have.
Here we go.
Talk Radio National Weather.
A fine afternoon for most, though wind and some rain in the south with a chill. Tonight will be dry and cold for many with a widespread frost. That southern wind and rain will hang around, though. This afternoon's high is 13 Celsius.
Toby with us throughout the afternoon, of course, keeping us up to date on the events. Still a breaking news story in many ways. We just learned that the attacker was known to the authorities. We're still yet to hear about the links with the raids in Birmingham in an official capacity. At least the West Midlands police referring all journalistic questions down to Scotland Yard. All of that throughout the afternoon. We've got Steve Punt coming on. He is a comedy writer. He'll be keeping us in the loop as to how on earth you're supposed to be funny when things like this happen, or indeed, are you supposed to be funny? Ken Livingstone will be joining us as well at some point, and David Baddiel in. Much to come between now and 4 o'clock. Here's Ben with the sport.
Talk Radio Sports Update.
I'm Ben Fletcher. Good afternoon. A former England captain has told Talk Sport that manager Gareth Southgate may have found the magic formula in experimenting with a back three against Germany last night. Burnley defender Michael Keane started alongside Chris Smalling and Gary Cahill in the 1-0 friendly defeat in Dortmund. Ex-skipper Terry Butcher reckons England looked comfortable playing 3-4-3.
England didn't have much time to get used to it, but they certainly looked as though they've been playing it for years. And I think with Chelsea playing a back three, it seems to be the fashion now that teams do that. It does suit England players, you're right.
After 9 years at the Hawthorns, Jonas Olsen's leaving West Bromwich Albion to return to Swedish football. The club agreed to mutually terminate the last few months of the defender's contract and allow him to join Djurgården IF. Olsen made 253 appearances for the Baggies, scoring 14 goals. Finally, cricket. Kent have appointed former Australian international Jason Gillespie as interim assistant coach. The ex-Yorkshire head coach will stand in for Alan Donald. Gillespie left his job at Headingley at the end of last season, having won back-to-back county championship titles there in 2014 and 15. That's the latest sports news powered by Talk Sport.
Talk Radio.
Writing job descriptions, managing candidates, setting up interviews, hiring's hard. But Indeed.com makes it easy. Post your job, organise candidates, schedule interviews. All on the UK's number one job site. And with more people in the UK using Indeed than any other job site, easy works. Find your next hire at Indeed.com today. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Talk Radio. I am John Holmes. And as with our last hour of the show yesterday, we are today also going to be dropping most of our usual programme, because it just kind of feels inappropriate to do a programme like that, given the current events, all right? So that brings you up to speed with that. We're going to be bringing you continued coverage of the details and the aftermath of yesterday's terror attack in London. It's the afternoon programme. We'll be picking up with some of the issues surrounding the whole thing. I say good afternoon to you, first of all. That doesn't apply to you if you're a terrorist, by the way. If you're listening today, whether you're part of an organised cell or a so-called lone wolf, although I would posit that the phrase lone arsehole would be more accurate, because, let's be honest, your so-called ideology isn't really going to work out whether you're following orders or just, you know, bolting yourself onto a doomed jihadist agenda set by people in far-off countries that you've neither met nor spoken to. Right, so listen. This is what we're going to be doing this afternoon. We're going to be talking through it. We're going to be coming at it with some different angles that I don't think other people have done it. Well, I guess it's difficult for us all to talk about, isn't it, in many ways? Because how do you approach it? You know, what's the best way to discuss it? As I say, yesterday we just sort of took rolling news as it went. We were here reporting the situation as it unfolded. That's what we were thrown into. We did it. We got guests on. We'll be doing much the same today. But you know what? If you are listening and you are a terrorist, you know, I hope your knife goes off in your face, frankly. Here is an idea, right? If you are so committed to the cause, why not give us a call this afternoon, okay? Right? Now, the media today is full of people analysing why you do what you do. But if you're a terrorist, a lone arsehole, then call us, right? The number 0344 499 1000, and then tell us exactly what you think you're going to achieve by being all stabby and murdery. 0344 499 1000, right? Let's get through today's show. To reiterate, we're going to suspend the usual programme that we do to continue to bring you coverage of the terror attacks in London yesterday on Westminster. A lot of questions to ask, not least, are we part of the problem, right? Is rolling news coverage simply doing what the terrorists want us to do, right? That is, it's publicity after all, isn't it? And it's all anybody's talking about today in the media. Is it PR grist to the terrorist mill? We'll be talking about that later as well. Are we making it worse by talking about it, okay? Or does anyone outside London actually care as much as the London-centric media seem to? We'll be talking to people outside London to try and find out if that's true. We'll also be talking to a satirist to find out if we should be laughing at these morons, which I'm pretty sure we should be. Comedian David Baddiel will be joining us with his thoughts. Now, how do these kind of attacks get planned? OK, we hear of arrests in Birmingham, that's in the news as well, that are connected to yesterday's incident. So perhaps, you know, it's not a lone arsehole. Maybe there's a group of arseholes. Look, right, basically, if you're still wondering whether to phone in, right, do. OK, the number's 0344 499 1000. Why not call to tell us exactly how driving a car at people and then killing a police officer is going to lead to the crumbling of the West and establish a caliphate, right? Because it isn't. It's pointless, right? So call us, right, and let us know why you think it might be the case, OK? It's stupid and you're an arse. All right, we've got 3 hours. We can wait while you call in with an answer. That's absolutely fine. In the meantime, on Talk Radio, we'll have the latest news from Toby, as I say, every half an hour. But what do we know so far? That's what we're looking at now. We want the details. Of course, the news is changing all the time. On a day like this, it moves quickly. New information comes out. It's our job to bring you up to date with it. It's now 9 minutes past one. On the line is Patrick Mercer. He's a former Conservative Homeland Security spokesperson. Hello, Patrick. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So, bring us up to date on where we are so far, if you would, Patrick, please.
First of all, I'd like to echo your sentiments, if I may. I'd be extremely interested to hear if any of these young gentlemen or ladies or whoever they are out there have the courage, I underline the word courage, to phone in and talk to us. Of course they won't.
No.
Of course they won't. But they are. I like the sentiment. Well, what do we know? We know that the thing that the security services most worry about, namely a lone wolf attack, has occurred, and that although clearly it has caused casualties, they have been mercifully light. I'm not by any means trying to understate what has happened. Of course, it's a very sad event for the four people that have been killed.
Yes.
The fact remains that London has got off relatively lightly, thank the Lord. And it's very hard to protect against this. There is no such thing as a lone wolf, of course, because someone doesn't wake up in the morning and decide, right, today I'm going to go in and give my life for the particular cause. It takes some organising. It would seem as though a car has been hired. It is likely that there's going to be a small cell of terrorists, probably based outside London, we're not sure about that yet, who have got this poor, misguided individual, brushed him up a bit, and sent him against probably the one target in the United Kingdom where it can be guaranteed that a terrorist will be gunned down. There's no question about that. The man had no hope of surviving, nor did he want to. And that the density of targets was likely to give him something that was worth hitting. In this case, obviously, he's got it wrong. But he has done exactly the point that you are making, and I recognise the hypocrisy in what I'm just about to say, is that it has made us talk about it.
Yeah.
That's what they want, and that's what we're doing, and we're playing into their hands.
That's the question I was posing. You're absolutely right. And indeed, how far... Because the argument is the facts need to be covered, all right? So that's how news works. But, of course, the terrorists and the people that believe in what they're doing in this case are seeking us to do this. So is the answer, I mean, what is the answer to that? How do we ignore it? Should we ignore it? What do we do?
Well, let me pose a question to you. If I said to you, when was the last high explosive attack inside this kingdom, you'd probably be very hard pushed to know. The answer was a couple of days ago on St. Patrick's Day, when pipe bombs were thrown in Strabane in Northern Ireland.
Right.
Did that get into the... Well, nobody was injured, thank God. Did that get into the news? No. Did the media play that down? Did they report it for what it was, namely minor aggravation? The answer is yes. Did it help terrorists? No, because it wasn't given the oxygen of publicity that they wanted. Now, very hard that when something like this happens on the doorstep of the Britain's media, with of course the mouthpieces of the British Parliament on hand, then of course it's going to be talked about. It's going to be talked to death. But I do wish that we'd learned from the very similar, not identical, but the very similar murder of Fusilier Rigby a few years ago,
yes,
which was a low-intensity attack, if you like. In other words, two men, one had a pistol, one had a knife or knives, whatever. So not much resource that was needed for that. One poor, benighted, unfortunate, sad soldier was killed, had his head sawed off in public. It dominated the media. Well, what have we done again? Okay, there's four regrettably dead and a terrorist delightfully dead in this particular case. But we're doing exactly what they want. This has cost them almost nothing. The life of one of their volunteers, or whatever they want to call them, it's cheap stuff, and we're talking, and we're talking, and we're talking, and we're bigging it up.
Should we stop talking, Patrick? That's the question, though. Should we as the media just stop?
We've got to keep it in proportion. I say I would point towards the fact that not many people know that there were explosive attacks a few days ago in Northern Ireland.
Yep, yep.
I think that's a good thing. It's in proportion. People have understand it. The media, forgive me saying this, but the media have behaved responsibly in that case. And you and I, you know, I appreciate this is hypocrisy, but we're not helping.
Yeah. All right, Patrick, makes a very good point. And one of the questions we'll be posing throughout the programme, really, in a weird, ironic sort of way, in that by talking about it, are we doing exactly what they want us to do, which is to talk about it? But here we are. Maybe we're doing the wrong thing. I don't know. Let us know what you think. In fact, 8722.
Message of the word talk.
And how much do they cost? 25p plus
standard network rate.
Or you can tweet us, of course, at Talk Radio. On the line, Barry Gardner is on the line, Labour MP for Brent North. Hello, Barry.
Yes, hello.
So thank you for joining us at what is a difficult time, of course. So were you in Parliament yesterday?
Yes, I was. I'd just been to the vote. I was waiting for the next vote when it happened.
Yep.
And was corralled into the library of the House of Commons.
Right. And was that, in terms of just when you say corralled in, was that how many MPs, how many members of staff in Parliament were sort of put in there?
Oh, well, at that stage, it was probably about 25, 30 or so. Then we were escorted by the firearms officers downstairs, eventually about 1,000 or 1,200. Were taken over to Westminster Abbey, and we were kept in there for about 3 hours.
Okay, and in terms of what you knew, how was the information relayed to you about what was going on?
Well, we knew pretty well straight away what had happened. It was then a matter of finding out whether this was a lone attacker. It was important to vacate the building to ensure that the security forces could then do a complete sweep.
Yep.
And obviously people were detained in the Abbey and obviously the Chamber of House of Commons in order to account for everybody. And in these circumstances, obviously what we needed to know is that there wasn't an accomplice who might have been hiding in amongst the general public who yeah. were caught up in all of this as well.
Yeah, and what's the mood like today? Because obviously in the Great British Way, Parliament sitting again today, also the House of Lords, Theresa May obviously speaking to the Commons earlier as well. What's the mood like today, Barry?
I think it was best summed up by one Member of Parliament who quoted a piece of graffiti that went up in the underground station yesterday. And it simply said, "To all terrorists, polite note, we are British. We will continue to drink tea and carry on."
Drink tea and carry on. It is indeed the British way. Barry,
and
thank you.
Was, sorry, go on. Yeah, it just, I think, betokened the resolve that all of us had, that nothing should disturb the work of Parliament and nothing should interfere with this being a place where the public can come and see the representatives doing their job.
Okay, listen, Barry, thank you very much. That's the message, indeed, that was put up at the Tube, as Barry was saying. You know, Britain, essentially, drink tea and carry on. Although I have to say, personally, on the way home last night, most of the people I saw were drinking beer. I'll be brutally honest with you.
It's an alternative, John.
It's an alternative and a very British tradition in many ways as well. And I think, you know, most people sort of fancied a drink after it. And you know, but hey, being, and again, I don't, it is London centric, it's a London centric story, but it was quite interesting just walking around London yesterday on the South Bank as it was going on, as I had to. Just seeing people just going about their daily lives and just carrying on with it in that way that you'd sort of expect them to. Mm. You know, it was a kind of, it's always interesting, I think, when things happen like that and it sort of pulls everyone together in a sort of knowing, nodding kind of way. Do we want to go now to this is Chris Hobbs. Chris Hobbs is on the telephone. Hello, Chris.
Yeah, hi.
Thanks for joining us. Former Met Police Special Branch officer, now counter-terrorism. Talking a bit there, that was interesting. Barry Gardner, you probably heard him talking about public access to Parliament carrying on. It should be the right thing, of course. We live in a democracy that allows that. But there's going to be a security review now, isn't there?
There will be. There has to be after you've got an incident such as we have had. It's something that I think we all saw coming sooner or later, wasn't it, the maxim that we are going to be hit. And we've been hit right where it hurts, the centre of our parliamentary democracy. Yes, there's obviously issues arising from what happened yesterday, notwithstanding it was fact protection officers that actually shot the attacker dead.
Yep.
So there are issues to be discussed. But of course, as you rightly say, Parliament has to have access to the public, and as a lot of MPs have said this morning, so it is about striking that balance. But yes, there will be a review, and yes, I'm sure we will see armed police stationed on all entrances to the building in the not-too-distant future. Well, probably they will be there from today onwards, I would imagine.
It's interesting, isn't it, because the idea of, we touched on this yesterday as the news was breaking as well, but in the attacks, I mean, we now know Islamic State have claimed responsibility for this, but in the other attacks in Nice and in Brussels and in Paris, but bigger crowds of people, it seems, you know, Berlin's German market, whereas although it's Parliament, in terms of the casualties, and there, of course there have been some, but mercifully not as many as there could have been. And I wonder what would make this man or these people plan to do that, which seems slightly different to those previous attacks in that sense, does it not?
It does. I mean, if we accept, and we don't know for certain, that perhaps he's travelled some distance to get here, possibly from the Midlands, then he's obviously decided to target the centre of our democracy. And as you rightly say, if this attack had taken place anywhere else, if it had been Hemsby or Aberystwyth, it would still have got worldwide headlines. But this does have much more of an impact. And from a propaganda point of view, for the likes of Islamic State and other extremist groups, this is an absolute godsend because it's creating exactly what they wanted to create. It creates huge publicity.
And I feel slightly guilty. We were talking to Patrick Mercer, former Conservative Homeland Security spokesman, 10 minutes ago about this, and he appreciated the irony and almost the hypocrisy of what we're even doing talking about it now. But it's the nature of rolling news. And I honestly don't know where the line is, because I'm sort of thinking, like, why am I talking about this and not ignoring it? But we can't. And I guess there's no correct answer to this, is there, Chris, really, at the moment?
No, there's not. And I think there has been some criticism in the past where plots have been frustrated by the excellent work of the security services and police, that perhaps they haven't got the full coverage that perhaps they merited. So, again, you're talking about a very difficult balance. It's the same to a certain extent when you look at this gang-related knife crime that's going on at the moment, that's exploding, another problem the police have got. Yeah. And again, you get this feeling that all that should be being told is not being told. Possibly you don't want to give people, bad people, publicity, and partly because you don't want to unduly alarm the public. My view is the public deserve to be told.
All right, thank you, Chris. That's Chris Hobbs, former Met Police Special Branch officer, adding his thoughts to the debate, which we will be continuing throughout the afternoon. In case you're just joining us, hello, it's Talk Radio in the Afternoons. I'm John Holmes, and we are suspending what we normally do in the afternoons to bring you continued coverage of the story as it unfolds. Breaking news at the moment, Westminster Bridge has reopened for the first time since those attacks yesterday. We know there's been a raid in Birmingham that appears to have connections to what happened yesterday, although West Midlands Police are referring all inquiries down to Scotland Yard, which actually hints at that, of course. And we know that Islamic State have claimed responsibility. More stuff coming up. David Baddiel, comedian David Baddiel, will be joining us on the programme. Ken Livingstone's coming in. Comedy writer Steve Punt as well, on the difficulties of being funny. How do you do it? Should you do it? My view is yes, whenever these arseholes, frankly, pop their heads up and do this kind of stuff. But all of that to come. A lot of different angles this afternoon, which you may not have been hearing on other networks, because we think we're going to try and do it all a little bit differently. Important story. And we may get it wrong at times, but, you know, we're doing it live and frankly busking it. So bear with us. Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio. Talk and entertainment across the nation.
Talk Radio.
Give it some lip.
Introducing Domino's new walk-in wins. Buy one, get one free. Any size pizza at any time when you pop in store. And with click and collect, your order's raring to go when you arrive. Two delicious Domino's pizzas for the price of one with new walk-in wins. So just strut in, save time and bog off. Participating stores subject to availability. See dominos.co.uk.
Writing job descriptions, managing candidates, setting up interviews, hiring's hard. But Indeed.com makes it easy. Post your job, organise candidates, schedule interviews. All on the UK's number one job site. And with more people in the UK using Indeed than any other job site, easy works. Find your next hire at Indeed.com today. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
At 8:30pm on Saturday the 25th of March, millions of people across the world are coming together for WWF's Earth Hour. And it all begins with the flick of a switch. 1 hour where the world turns off their lights. 1 hour to show your support for our beautiful planet. 1 hour that connects us all. Sign up now and join hundreds of millions around the world for WWF's Earth Hour. Saturday, the 25th of March at 8:30pm. Search WWF to find out more.
And it's all change in the new season of Formula One on Channel 4. With new rules, faster cars, wider tyres, louder engines, fresh rivalries, quicker laps and closer races.
Race into the unknown. Formula One starts this weekend on Channel 4.
Let's talk about you. The I'll walk tomorrow you. Mm. The go on, I'll have a second helping you. The give us a minute love you. The heart disease you. So how about the enough is enough you? Start the fight back to a healthier you. Join over a million people who've taken the One You health quiz. See how you score. Search One You.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
Well, through the West Midlands, the M6 northbound from 6 up to Junction 7 is looking a little bit busy at the moment. It's all due to some roadworks. That's coming from Birmingham up to Great Barr at Junction 7. The M40 northbound through Oxfordshire, one lane is closed off. There's a broken down vehicle just at Junction 9 at the Bicester turnoff, and traffic is doing okay. But you'll also find on the M3 northbound through Hampshire, one lane closed off between Junction 10 and 9, also along that stretch. I'm Poonam Verma.
When you're building a great business, only one thing really matters. People. And for the best people, you need the job site used by more UK candidates than any other. Find your people today at Indeed.com. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Talk Radio. I am John Holmes and we have suspended what we normally do on the weekday afternoon between 1 and 4. Today, much as we did for the last hour yesterday when this news broke, of course, of the attack in Westminster. Updates, Westminster Bridge has reopened for the first time since those attacks. Islamic State have claimed responsibility for the attacks. I want another update for you. No terrorists have called the programme yet, despite me urging them to. If you are, calling them a lone wolf seems to give it some kind of air of, I don't know, mysticism, or just sort of makes it sound glamorous. Lone arsehole, right? If you are one of those and you want to call the programme to tell us what exactly why you think the sort of thing that happened yesterday is going to change anything and bring down the Western world, because I'm telling you now, it isn't, then 03444991000, we are waiting for your call. On the line now, Dr. Bex Lewis. She's a senior lecturer in digital marketing at Manchester Metropolitan University. Dr. Bex Lewis, hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, what I was going to talk about, which frankly is why you're here, Dr. Bex, is we have seen on the front of the papers today, and there's been a little bit of controversy over it, about the nature of the images that people are using. The Daily Mail, for instance, have used a zoomed-in picture of the terrorist after he's been shot. Various photos coming with sort of warnings, but it's a bit late then, they're on the shelves. But then, of course, social media and people out and about on the streets and sharing of these graphic images. The BBC have even come under criticism for showing the speeding car going along the bridge and knocking that poor woman into the water. Social media, graphic images, where are we?
Well, it's definitely something that's happening more and more, isn't it? Whereas before, all our kind of images were curated because we had to wait for them to be processed. And so the first we'd see would be on a newspaper, and typically that would be the day after, and people would have had time to think about which images they were going to show. It now feels like a bit of a race to be the first to show a picture.
Yeah.
And it's kind of whether that's healthy or not. I put a bit of this on my Facebook, and most people are kind of like, this is disgraceful, we don't want to see this kind of stuff. Those are people's loved ones. We really don't need to see all of that. But others, there's a recent one which I thought was quite interesting, saying actually if we had more of these kind of pictures and we weren't protecting ourselves quite so much from those kind of pictures, maybe we'd realise what the world was like and we'd fight harder against it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think we sometimes do know what it's like because of, as we've been discussing already, you know, the fact that we've got rolling news now. Social media, of course, feeds into rolling news. They both feed off themselves, don't they? And I wonder if indeed the media outlets, and I'm talking about television, and specifically images here, and newspapers, would think twice about putting some of the images out there that they do if we didn't have social media, which has sort of upped the stakes for it.
Yes, I mean, it's that kind of race to the bottom in some respects, isn't it? It reminds me of a Black Mirror episode, I can't remember which one, in which everyone's wandering around with phones rather than trying to help anyone. I think there is a thing, actually, about people being worried about stepping in case they're going to be sued. I think that's a side issue, just because there was other pictures of people not helping.
Yeah.
But I think seeing what's happening, there is a sort of prurient thing that all of us want to kind of see something. And then once you've seen it, the trouble is you can't get out of your head. You've already seen it. And I think it's kind of what we demand. So if yesterday the police were saying, please don't share them, it's an ongoing investigation, it might be giving intel to, if he's not a lone person, I refuse to use the wolf thing like you were saying.
Yeah, quite rightly, yeah.
then, you know, that could be giving information to someone else. And this was kind of on Facebook tied against the Sun saying, horrific pictures from Westminster, come and have a look. And the trouble is, if people are clicking on those, they're going to know that's what sells.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're going to keep doing that kind of thing. So we literally have to make a choice to say, no, we don't want to do that, and call other people out. Or otherwise, they're just going to give us what we want.
And I know, Dr. Becks, you know, we're straying into the realms of psychology here, which may not necessarily be your, you know, first go-to skill here. But as a human being, what is it about those sort of pictures? It's like the old driving past the car crash thing, isn't it, in a way? There's something in human nature that kind of makes us want to look, even if we know we're not going to like it.
Yeah, and we just can't help it. I mean, I'm not a psychologist by training at all. So, but there is something. I actually studied wartime propaganda posters as my PhD.
Okay.
And they went out of their way not to show pictures of death because people were encountering enough of it every day. And to a certain extent, we see a lot of it in films, don't we? And it's quite difficult sometimes to tell the difference between a real picture and a film picture. But psychologists do say that if we see the same news item 50 times with a distressing picture, our brain processes it as if it sees 50 of those pictures rather than 50 of the same picture.
That's
and that's kind of adding up to a kind of repeat trauma that's actually quite difficult to cope with.
And finally, interesting, you're talking about the sort of Facebook there and different opinions. Is the answer, cause a lot of the worst images are often on social media, as we've been saying, is the answer to say, okay, you don't like this stuff, get off social media, knowing full well people won't do that, but that is an answer, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm more keen on kind of changing culture and thinking about how we can be more positive participants in it, and thinking about what is kind of socially acceptable and who we're showing to. I always think it's interesting that we're quite happy to show pictures of children being bombed to bits in Syria, but the minute it happens in our country, that's a problem. And it's like, what's different? Why are they kind of othered? But I think we can use the tools that social media has. So like for Twitter, for instance, you can turn off the photo preview.
Yeah.
And so you can choose to look at things. I think Facebook also, you can probably turn certain things off. So there's lots you can do to shut down what you're seeing. But I think we do need to keep talking about what's acceptable and reduce the chance of what people don't want to see is not out there.
Okay.
But I don't think we're ever all going to agree on what's not acceptable.
Ah, such is life, Dr. Bex Lewis. Senior Lecturer, Digital Marketing at Manchester Metropolitan University. Thank you very much. Interesting stuff. Look, we're also going to take your reactions. I mean, genuinely, what do you think? You're probably on social media now. You've probably seen some of these images. You might be thinking, why are you talking about this, John? You're just giving them the oxygen of publicity. We are talking about that as well. Believe me, I appreciate the hypocrisy and the irony, but here we are just trying to do what we're trying to do. So your thoughts welcome on all of it, really. 87222.
Start your message with the word talk.
Or you can use Twitter, of course, at Talk Radio. Texts cost
25 pence plus your standard network rate.
Thank you there, Admin Dave.
Thank you.
Right, in the next half an hour of the programme, well, bringing you more stuff, of course. David Baddiel will be joining us within the hour, certainly. We're going to be talking about the news as it breaks. Toby's here to bring us up to date momentarily. We will still be going through the paper today. Rudd, one of our regular paper reviewers, is going to be doing that for us in the next half an hour before 2 o'clock. It's Talk Radio in the afternoons. We've suspended normal programming. We're bringing you a sort of weird, afternoon show compared to what we normally do. Special. Bear with us. We're doing our best. Just after 1:30, Toby's got the news.
Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. The so-called Islamic State group says one of its fighters was behind the attack in London yesterday. It's offered no evidence to support its claim. Little is known about the attacker, but earlier Prime Minister Theresa May confirmed he was British-born and known to MI5. She also paid tribute to the unarmed police officer Keith Palmer, who was stabbed to death as he guarded the Palace of Westminster.
PC Palmer had devoted his life to the service of his country. He had been a member of the Parliamentary and Diplomatic Protection Command for 15 years and a soldier in the Royal Artillery before that. He was a husband and a father, killed doing a job he loved. He was every inch a hero.
The Prime Minister also hailed Britain's resilience, insisting we are not afraid, while the Queen says her thoughts, prayers and deepest sympathy are with the victims of the attack. In total, 3 innocent people were killed, but some have argued that the widespread coverage of the attack is actually helping the terrorists. Former Conservative Homeland Security spokesman Patrick Mercer told John he agrees.
There's 4 regrettably dead and a terrorist delightfully dead in this particular case, but we're doing exactly what they want.
this has cost them almost nothing, the life of one of their volunteers or whatever they want to call them. It's cheap stuff, and we're talking and we're talking and we're talking and we're bigging it up.
Meanwhile, in the last quarter hour, the bridge where two of the victims were killed by a car has reopened. Westminster Bridge was closed off as soon as the attack occurred yesterday afternoon. Eight people remain under arrest in connection with the attack. They were picked up in London and Birmingham during raids on six properties overnight. And in other news, two of the world's biggest communication firms have become the latest to pull their advertising from Google. AT&T and Verizon are angry about their brands being promoted on YouTube videos containing extremist content. UK firms including Marks & Spencer, Tesco, Sainsbury's and The Times have also cancelled deals with the search engine. Now here's your weather. A fine afternoon for most, though wind and some rain in the south with a chill. Tonight will be dry and cold for many with a widespread frost, that southern wind and rain hanging around too. This afternoon's highs 13 degrees Celsius.
Toby, thank you very much. Toby back in half an hour, of course, to bring us up to date with this news. As it keeps changing, of course, it's one of those situations where it will, and that's what we're going to be doing with you this afternoon through till 4 o'clock.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
So we're trying this afternoon to answer, I don't think we're going to get any, but, you know, do our best anyway to at least approach this terrible story in slightly different ways to how other shows, even on this station, might have been covering it by getting some quite interesting guests to talk about different angles. I'll say David Baddiel is coming in to talk to us this afternoon. Steve Punt, the writer and comedian, will be here, and we're going to be talking about how you, as a satirist, work through comedy at a time like this. Should we be laughing at these people? To which, as I say, the answer is yes, because they are arseholes. However, it's interesting how we all approach it. To talk us a little bit through how we approach, I don't know, life when something terrible happens like this, is Sir Simon Wesley, President of the Royal College of Psychiatrists. He's on the telephone. Hello, Sir Simon.
Hello there.
Hi there. Thanks for joining us. Two questions I wanted to sort of tackle with you. Firstly, just to pick up on a point we were making before the news, in terms of, we were talking a little bit about the images and people sharing graphic images on social media and then them making their way into the newspapers and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we were sort of talking about the human nature and in terms of it being like that looking at a car crash mentality that we all seem to have. And in the modern world, you know, people are taking pictures of this stuff, I guess slightly detached from it, to then post in a race to be first with it, in a race to, I don't know what. What is it about us that draws us to tragedy like this?
Well, I did hear the end of that interview, and I think your expert said actually no one can really agree on this, and they're not going to agree now as to what we should and shouldn't be showing. And I think that's right. I don't think it really is a matter for experts. I think it is a matter of taste, decency and common sense. And also that these things change. And not that long ago, one of the greatest in grisly execution. And this is, you know, fun for all the family. We wouldn't do that now. So, but that doesn't mean that, you know, human nature has changed. What it just means is what culturally acceptable is to change the standards. We've also got the problem, of course, of the medium rather than the message. We have a medium which can spread things far quicker than happened before. But I don't think the actual impacts are that different.
Okay, your line's slightly breaking up there, Simon. Just bear with us. We're going to take a break now anyway, and we'll try and get you back on a better line than that, as saying some very interesting things, but fading in and out. Talk Radio, I'm John Holmes. What's happening is we've suspended normal programming. We are bringing you a special, if you like, really covering the unfolding events of yesterday's terror attack in Westminster. Stay with us. We'll try and get Simon back on a different line after this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Taking care of business on Talk Radio with Exporting is great. If you're a small or medium-sized business owner, you can't afford to miss Talk Radio's expert guide to exporting. From market research to resource management, logistics to local lingo, get essential advice on expanding your product or services overseas. Taking care of business on the Paul Ross Full Set Breakfast on Talk Radio. Take the next step towards exporting. Visit great.gov.uk. The demand is out there. You should be too.
Thanks, Wilbur. At British Gas, we want to celebrate the continued loyalty of our customers, which is why we kept our standard variable tariff unchanged through the winter. Now we're going one step further by extending our price freeze. And that's not the only thing. We're creating a rewards program that saves energy, money, and hassle. If you're not a British Gas customer, visit our homepage to find out more. British Gas, helping you look after your home.
Have I got PPI?
Want to know if you've had PPI? Find out with our free PPI check. We had claimed back PPI in the past, but it turns out there were some lenders we hadn't checked. The service Stanton Fisher provided was absolutely brilliant. We didn't have a lot to do, and the results spoke for themselves. We received over £2,500. So text CHECK to 80800 for your free PPI check.
Have I got PPI.com?
That's CHECK to 80800.
Ella's one-handed stir fry.
My friends used to say, when you have your first kid, you'll always have your hands full. I had triplets. Now I've only ever got one hand free at the very most, so I've had to learn to do everything one-handed, even cooking. I have mastered the stir-fry. I take fresh veg, pork marinated in hoisin, and noodles, then stir it all into a wok. Easy. It's delicious enough to have again and again and again, and simple enough to do while I'm playing peekaboo.
Find Ella's one-handed stir-fry recipe online or in-store. Food Love Stories, brought to you by Tesco.
Selling is just as easy as buying on eBay. List your items for free and only pay when you sell. So there's never been a better time to get on eBay. Private sellers only, conditions and exclusions apply.
Good news! I'm getting a pay rise.
I'm getting a pay rise too.
So am I.
That's because from the 1st of April, the national minimum wage
and the national living wage
will be going up.
What's more, it's your legal right to receive it.
Find out if you're due a pay rise too.
Check your pay at gov.uk/checkyourpay.
The national minimum wage
and the national living wage.
It's a step up in pay.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
Through Cheshire at the moment, the M6 northbound at Junction 17. We've got one lane closed off. It is due to an accident. Two cars and a van involved, so do be careful and approach to that. Through Hampshire, the M3 northbound, we've got a broken down vehicle between Junction 10 and Junction 9. That's blocking one lane, but traffic's okay. In the M6 northbound, a bit of traffic still. And that's if you're coming from Birmingham at Junction 6, heading up to Great Bar at Junction 7. I'm Poonam Verma.
When you're building a great business, only one thing really matters. People. And for the best people, you need the job site used by more UK candidates than any other. Find your people today at Indeed.com. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Talk Radio. I'm John Holmes. If you're just joining us, suspending what we normally do in the weekday afternoon between 1 and 4, as we are following the story of yesterday, really. We broke the news on Talk Radio during the programme yesterday, and we thought we'd carry on with it today. Trying to come at it, though, from a variety of different angles. Angles you may not have heard on other programmes. Other networks. To wit, later we'll be joined by David Baddiel. Steve Punt is coming in, of course, the writer and satirist, to talk about how you'd be funny at times like this. Much other besides. Simon Wesley, we were talking to just before the break there. He had a dodgy phone line. I think he's back on the line with a better one. Simon, hello.
Indeed.
Good,
yeah,
good
sorry
news.
About that.
That's all right. So we were talking initially about the images. That's how we got into it. And where people's, I don't know, gut instinct to look at tragedy comes from.
Well, it's the instincts that we all have of seeing, A, things we're not supposed to see, and C, the frisson that one gets from seeing dramatic images, no matter how unpleasant. I think I was saying that this isn't anything new, and that, you know, gruesome methods of public execution were a kind of family activity, maybe 150 years ago. So I wouldn't say this is anything new. I also think, as your previous expert said, that people will never agree on what is acceptable and what isn't, and people will find a way to access the kind of images that perhaps you and I would find distasteful but others don't, whatever we do in our modern communication world, unless of course they're using my mobile phone, in which case they probably won't.
I mean, it's you make a very interesting point about public executions. You're absolutely right. Of course, this goes back to, you know, huge spectacles of people being hung and tortured, and the public flocking to this. Thankfully we've kind of moved away from that, but what is it, though, about I don't know, human nature at that level? That's a hard question to answer, but hey, you're president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, so if you can't, no one can, frankly.
Well, I think the answer then is going to be no one can. But I also think when you say we've moved away from it, I think the evidence is that, of course, we haven't. Mm. And the availability of appalling images, you might say it's a market. These images are looked at, they are passed around, they have their fascination. So it would come back to your original point, human nature hasn't changed much, even if culture, taste and things have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone. You know, I will look at an image like that and not really know why I'm doing it, but I'll certainly get someone said, this is a horrible image of what happened.
I think also that it's a particularly huge issue. I mean, if we're going to, if the issue is this some way that we're traumatizing ourselves or whatever we're going to call it, I think the evidence is reasonable that we probably aren't, and people who do gawp at these images that were going around yesterday, I mean, I think it's a bit distasteful. That's just my view. But I don't think we can have a moral panic about this represents a disintegration of society in all shapes and forms, because I don't think it does.
Sure. Is it part of the grieving process even? I mean, how do we grieve at times like this?
Well, first of all, let's be clear. There are some people in this city who are really grieving, in the proper use of the word grieving at the moment. Mm-hmm. Those who've been bereaved or closely associated with those who've lost their lives. And that is, that is something else. So what I'm going to say now is not about that. I do not think, and all the evidence that we've done from studies in the immediate aftermath of these big outrages, is that people are grieving, and I think it's the wrong use of the word. It's a kind of artificial grief, if you want, and shouldn't be contrasted with the unbearable pain and suffering of grief of those who've been bereaved. What we have is, well, you know, this morning I lost count of the number of journalists saying, oh, London is in a state of shock. Yeah. The strange thing is, coming to work, as you did this morning and I did it look like people were in a state of shock?
No.
I mean, no, it didn't.
No,
they're not. And people saying, you know, bad business yesterday. Yes, that's true. But, you know, and some people we know from our work after London bombs are genuinely upset by these things. But this is a normal human emotion to be upset, and they deal with it in the normal human way. And it shouldn't be regarded as abnormal, and certainly not anything that needs help or treatment.
I saw someone tweeting earlier today, which was an interesting quote regarding what you just mentioned, actually. This is a reporter, of course, out on the streets, going up to someone going to work, saying, you're defiant this morning, defying the terrorists. And this person just went, no, I'm just going to work. And the reporter said, defiantly.
You know, and I wish I'd seen that one.
It's sort of attitude, isn't it? And it was the same going home last night, in a way. You know, London was still on lockdown, around Westminster. But everyone was, of course they were. They're just going about their business entirely normally and sort of nodding at each other in a sort of, this is bad, but here we go kind of a way.
And there's two things we should remember, is that in general, even those who were caught up in these events, people talk about panic, etc. But when you looked at most of the films, and we've done this over all sorts of different outrages and disasters, in general, people do not panic. And often when you see people running away from a disaster, like at Brussels Airport, for example, you then saw, actually, because they were being told to run by the police. That's not the natural instinct. We also know that a large number of people do the exact opposite and actually act incredibly altruistically and come and help long before emergency services and so on get to the scene.
Yes. Okay. Simon, thank you for talking to us. Thank you for taking the time. Sir Simon Westley there, President of the Royal College of Psychiatrists. Quite interesting, that, I think, in many ways, because you find that people, and he's right, of course, people are grieving properly, whereas people now grieve by association through a hashtag, it seems to me. And it's all that kind of Pray for London stuff, which is all very well. But do people attach themselves to that a bit too much because they want to feel part of what's going on? Interesting stuff. Anyway, look, we're going to... I said we were going to talk about the trying circumstances, as these are, in which to write comedy. Mandy Baker's on the phone. She's a BBC journalist and also a comedy writer for various, BBC Radio 4 comedy programmes, many other things, Charlie Brooker notwithstanding. Mandy, good afternoon. Hello.
Hello, John.
Thanks for joining us. Now, interesting question, isn't it? You have to do funny for a living. How do you do funny when things aren't particularly funny?
Well, I think, I mean, my life is split between reporting politics and then sort of making fun of it. And today I'm quite conflicted on this because, you know, I'm not grieving. Of course I'm not grieving, but, you know, I walk past those policemen every day. And so there's a feeling of solemnity and sadness around. But, you know, we carry on. Everything carries on. And I think there is a certain amount of gallows humour as well amongst journalists. But also, I remember for once asking the producer of Have I Got News For You, what don't they do? And he said, we don't do death. And then he thought, and he said, well, sad death.
Mm.
And it is that. And I know that in, you know, when you're sitting with Charlie Brooker, as I have done, it's more a case of, it's not looking, the event may not be sad, and it may be sad and desperate, but it's not. You're not making fun of that. You're making fun of how it's covered or how people react to it. So that's the way you have to.
I think
that's
exactly right. I think because you know, speaking as you know, I mean, I know you professionally anyway. Of course, yeah. I've worked with you on stuff, and you're right. And I get the same question. People do say, well, oh, you can't possibly be funny about that. Well, you go, well, we're not being funny about that. We're being funny about everything that's attached to it that is either hypocritical.
Yeah, if I remember, John, you saying to me, can you write some stuff for me? I said, what do you want to write about? And you said ISIS.
That's right.
And the worst thing about this was we'd done it 2 weeks before, so we were doing more ISIS jokes. So it's not easy, but as you say, it's not writing about ISIS. ISIS is not funny. It's writing about how the world is reacting to it, really.
It is. I mean, and the problem is it's not funny because of what they do, but the sort of, I mean, it's that Four Lions, you know, the Chris Morris film idea about these just sort of almost, I mean, that's quite prescient in many ways, these sort of lone, we're not referring to them as lone wolves because I think that gives them a cachet we don't need to give them. So I'm calling them lone arseholes today. But you know, I think that there's always a way of dealing with grief and with tragedy by finding the funny stuff. And is that uniquely British, though? Because does that ring true? Is that something we do?
In a way, I think Americans would find it much harder to laugh about things. I think things are often off-limits for them. And I don't really think there is much off-limits for us. I mean, in this week, we're not. I don't think we're ever going to laugh about what's happened. Intrinsically, it is not funny. But the fact is that the whole situation, there will be things that come out which are amusing.
Yes.
And it's very hard for people because I lost two friends on the 7th of July, and I can't laugh about that at all. There's nothing funny, even about associations. And there will be people who will never be able to see anything light in what has happened yesterday. However, for everyone else, there is a way of getting through it and laughing. And I know Londoners have been very keen to say, like you've just said, we're not bravely defying the terrorists today. We're just doing our jobs.
That's
we're
right.
just going about our jobs. And I think that's the way humorists and comedians and comedy writers will deal with this. You know, we have to go on. And we do. I think in Britain there is a unique thing about how we laugh in the face of difficulty, a sort of Dunkirk spirit of humour.
Okay, Mandy, listen, thank you very much for joining us. Mandy Baker there, she's a BBC journalist and comedy writer, two different hats there, but when worlds collide, just a little insight there into what happened. Steve Punt from BBC Radio 4's The Now Show will be coming in later on this afternoon as well, talking to us about how he approaches it. David Baddiel will be in as well. Ken Livingstone, not noted for his stand-up comedy or anything, but he's coming in anyway to talk us through the thoughts of a former mayor of London at a time like this. He, of course, was mayor of London during the bombings of 2005 and was in Singapore when that happened, not even in his home city. Anyway, we'll be asking him all about that later on the programme. Now, however, we don't really have a paper review. And, well, you know what? We're going to carry on doing that. One of our regulars is Rudd. He's here. Hello, Rudd.
Hi.
Hi there. Well, paper review, I mean, I think I know what we're going to be concentrating on.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of one thing that, there's one thing that links them all. The main thing that I noticed is the difference in the pictures that the papers used. I'm not just saying this because we're affiliated with them, but the cover of the Times is a fantastic picture.
That is a picture I haven't seen anywhere else.
Oh, have you not? There's a really. I saw someone tweet it earlier.
Right.
If you haven't seen the front page of the Times, it's kind of quite a wide shot of Tobias Elwood. Giving CPR to the
MP who
So Tobias Elwood, who was an MP who lost his brother in the Bali bombings back in 2002, and there's loads of reports. People have said that while everyone was running away, Tobias Elwood was running into it all to try save people. Anyway, it's a fantastic picture. You've got policemen kind of pointing a gun at the assailant, And because I saw it tweeted earlier, someone said, look at this, there's so much going on. Just zoom in and just kind of scroll anywhere and you'll see like a different story being told.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, because a lot of the papers have gone with the close-ups, yeah. Right?
Well, the Sun and the Mail have both gone with close-ups of the attacker on a, what's it called, a gurney.
Yeah.
The Eye, I think, has done it very well. They've kind of managed to censor it with the headline and still get Tobias Elwood in. The Guardian's got Tobias Elwood as well. I mean, what a guy.
Where do we stand on... We've just been talking about imagery, and yeah. Certainly on social media, but where do we stand on it in newspapers? Because my sense of it is it you do get more graphic pictures now on front pages.
Yeah.
And I wonder, and we were talking earlier to a couple of people about this, but whether or not the proliferation of this sort of imagery on social media has led that, because the papers still have to kind of be ahead of the curve with this stuff.
My kind of assumption would have been that the papers, the editors can assume... Everyone will have seen this stuff on Twitter already. Like we don't have to be as careful as we used to be.
Although is that true? Because you know this is glaring out from a petrol station forecourts where children are in cars, and kids aren't necessarily. I mean, I'm talking kids like my kids are seven and five, so you know they can see this stuff just by going into the shop, but they can't see it on social media because they're not on it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess that's just a debate that they've got to have with themselves, really. And I'm not sure how you'd go about kind of making that decision. But yeah, the headlines that the different papers have chosen. Assault on Westminster from the Times. The Telegraph has got a brilliant headline. We will never allow evil to drive us apart, which I think is very true.
It's very interesting as well how looking at the range of and it is obviously we concentrate on the front pages. The papers. Yeah. I mean, how many pages has the Sun got on this?
The Sun is covering it on page 2, 3, 4, 5. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and back page.
And back page. Even their sports page, of course, even on a day when
England
and Germany, of course, the morning after that. Yeah, now, I was going to mention that. The back page of The Sun is particularly graphic.
That is not... Yeah, I've only just seen that.
Well, there you go. Which leads me, you know, back to that point. It's a case of going, is it necessary? I mean, I know it's the job is to sell papers, it's to report the news. Arguably, and I have no answers, I'm not pretending I do, but arguably, is that the right thing to do? Because that's a gory picture.
It's very gory. For those who haven't seen the back page of The Sun, it's, again, Tobias Elwood, because they put the attacker on the front page and then on the back page, The Sun have got Tobias Elwood giving... what's
CPR.
It called? CPR to the guy. And there's you can see quite a lot of blood.
Yeah. Well, it was even on television yesterday as it was breaking. Yeah. I was sitting here. We have screens in the studio, and there were overhead helicopter shots zooming in on the people lying on the bridge. And the BBC came under some criticism early this morning, I saw, for they happened to have filmed the car, long distance, but speeding across the bridge, knocking that woman into the water.
Yeah. That clip is astonishing.
It is. But then they highlight the woman falling into the water.
Yeah.
You know, and you sort of go, I know we need to know this stuff, but how do we need that? And again, I have no answers. Simon Wesley from the Royal College of Psychiatry was saying much the same thing. People have different levels of tolerance.
I mean, I guess it's just the easy answer, I guess, would be is we all love it. I mean, you know, if someone says, hey, look, do you want to see a picture of someone who got their hand stuck in a blender? You're going, let me have it.
Yeah. Not everyone.
But, I mean... People, if you had the option of watching something that didn't have that clip and something that did have that clip, I think the majority of the people have that curiosity.
I'd rather watch someone's hand in a blender than Keith Lemon.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've all got our levels of tolerance.
I'd rather put my hand in a blender than watch Keith Lemon.
We've all got our levels of tolerance, is what I'm saying. Rudd, listen, thank you very much. Lots to talk about, of course. There still is on the programme. David Baddiel is going to be joining us. Comedian and writer Steve Punt is going to be in. Ken Livingstone will be in chatting to us this afternoon, along with many others. We're trying to come at this at a slightly different angle to how other shows might be covering it. We're flying in the wind. We're doing our best. We'll see what we can do. But we're here till 4 o'clock. I'm John Holmes. We're suspending normal programming and bringing you continued coverage of the aftermath of those terrible attacks in London yesterday. It's Talk Radio in the afternoons.
Talk Radio. Digital debate for the UK.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Do you dream of being part of a more exciting fleet?
Where to, mate?
Spending your spare time with an interesting new crew. If you've got ambitions that go beyond the everyday, listen to the Paul Russ Full Set Breakfast on Talk Radio and learn more about serving in the Royal Navy Reserve. Develop new skills, expand your horizons, and experience challenges and opportunities you won't find in your day job. The Paul Russ Full Set Breakfast tomorrow morning from 6 on Talk Radio. Don't do the everyday every day. Search Royal Navy Reserve.
Britain, it's March, a month where the most exciting things to happen are gray skies, spring showers, and Crufts. So if you're sitting inside dreaming about April, then snap out of it. Because EE has mega deals in store throughout March. Save £180 on a super fast 4G SIM and get 20 gigabytes for just $19.99 per month. Chop, chop. These offers won't last forever. March in store now for even more mega March deals.
Offer ends 4th of April 2017. Minimum term applies. Other terms apply. See ee.co.uk.
Writing job descriptions, managing candidates, setting up interviews. Hiring's hard. But Indeed.com makes it easy. Post your job, organise candidates, schedule interviews. All on the UK's number one job site. And with more people in the UK using Indeed than any other job site, easy works. Find your next hire at Indeed.com today. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
eBay has every kind of car part for everyone from beginners to the real experts.
Well, that just stopped them squeaking.
Brake pads.
And that's the engine sorted.
Motor oil.
And that's the handling taken care of.
Alloys and tyres.
And that means I've saved myself a few quid.
12-foot snooker table for the spare room. Shop eBay's unbeatable selection of car parts and accessories. The ultimate fix the car like a hero shop.
Relax and embark on a journey from BT to Post Office Home Phone. Free yourself from BT's prices and picture paying just $14.99 a month. Experience calm and keep your number. Breathe in affordable line rental. Breathe out your old provider. Search Post Office Home Phone or visit your local branch for better value line rental. Post Office Home Phone. Sorted. Offer ends 3rd of the 4th, 2017. $14.99 a month for 12 months and $16.99 a month thereafter. No minimum term contract. Full terms at postoffice.co.uk/home phone.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. Talk Radio.
Yes, it is just after 2 o'clock. Good afternoon. It's Thursday. I'm John Holmes. Toby's got the latest news now.
Good afternoon. Coming up, Westminster Bridge reopens after attack. British resilience hailed and similar attack foiled in Belgium.
Talk Radio.
It's emerged the Westminster attacker was known to the police and MI5. Theresa May told a packed House of Commons he was investigated some years ago for violent extremism, but wasn't part of the current intelligence picture. She also hailed the British spirit, insisting, "We are not afraid." It's a sentiment matched by Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn.
It behoves us all not to rush to judgment, but to wait for the police to establish the facts, to stay united in our communities and not allow fear or the voices of hatred to divide or cower us.
The so-called Islamic State has claimed one of its soldiers was behind the attack. What we know is that he was British-born. And UKIP leader Paul Nuttall told Talk Radio he wants to see changes to the way mosques in the UK are policed and funded.
The Muslim community has to stand up and be counted and cut this cancer out, which, you know, this cancer of radicalisation. And I think down the line, we have to look at Saudi funding of mosques, because Saudi Arabia basically spread radicalism around the globe.
Meanwhile, in the last hour, Westminster Bridge, where two of the victims were killed by a car, has reopened after police concluded their investigations there. The other victim was PC Keith Palmer, an unarmed officer who died whilst trying to stop the attacker getting into Parliament. Policing Minister Brandon Lewis says people should feel proud of the country's officers.
We owe a huge debt to every single officer for what they put themselves to every single day to keep us safe. I spend time with armed officers, I've been particularly with some in the last couple of weeks, seeing the specialist training they do and the work they go to, and we owe them a huge debt of thanks and their family for that.
Eight people are being questioned by police after six raids across London and Birmingham overnight. Meanwhile, Belgian police say they've foiled a similar style attack in Antwerp. A driver was stopped as he tried to drive into a crowd at high speed in a shopping
district of the city. A French registered vehicle has been seized. And in other news today, the United Nations says 400,000 people are trapped in part of Mosul, which is still under Islamic State rule. Food is running out as a huge international push to free the Iraqi city continues. And more brands are pulling their ads from Google. AT&T and Verizon are the latest in a string of companies who don't want to be associated with extremist online videos.
Talk Radio National Weather.
A fine afternoon for most, though wind and some rain in the south with a chill. Tonight will be dry and cold for many with a widespread frost. That southern wind and rain will hang around. This afternoon's high's 13 degrees Celsius.
Toby, thank you very much indeed. Toby bringing us up to date with the news every half an hour here on Talk Radio. As you know, if you've been listening since we came on air at 1, we are suspending normal programming, certainly what we do between 1 and 4 on a weekday afternoon, because we are covering, in a slightly different way, though, I hope, the terrible events of yesterday and the aftermath. Later on we'll be joined by David Baddiel, who'll be giving his thoughts on what's happened as well. Thought it'd be an interesting point of view, talking to some people from the world of comedy about how you tackle something like this and still retain funny. We'll be doing that. We're also going to be talking to somebody from music radio. Now, I've got a background in music radio, and I always find it fascinating how they react to it on there, because they don't necessarily roll with it as news, but they do have to go through every single song that's being played and check it for references that could be misconstrued by a listener. So, for instance, you know, yesterday, I can tell you now that music radio stations will have gone through, and I'll include Radio 2 in this, and Radio 1 as well, would have had to go through and go, oh my goodness, have we got anything scheduled by, for example, Massive Attack? You'd pull it, right? That's how it works. But we are going to be talking to the head of music at Virgin Radio later on the programme, and I think that'll be quite interesting, because how do they do it? What's your knowledge? You've got to have a knowledge of every lyric. How does it work, and how quickly do they have to put that plan into action? Anyway, all of that, lots of other stuff to come before 4 o'clock. But next, we are going to be talking to a former Met police officer on Talk Radio.
Talk Radio Sports Update.
I'm Ben Fletcher. Good afternoon. A former England captain has told Talk Sport that Gareth Southgate's side looked at home playing in a 3-4-3 formation against Germany last night. Burnley defender Michael Keane started alongside Chris Smalling and Gary Cahill in the 1-0 friendly defeat in Dortmund. Ex-skipper Terry Butcher says the experiment with three at the back was a successful one.
England didn't have much time to get used to it, but they certainly looked as though they've been playing it for years. And I think with Chelsea playing a back three, it seems to be the fashion now that teams do that. It does suit England players, you're right.
After 9 years at West Brom, Jonas Olsson is leaving the Hawthorns to return to Swedish football. The club agreed to mutually terminate the last few months of the defender's contract and allow him to join Djurgården IF. Olsson made 253 appearances for the Baggies, scoring 14 goals. Finally, cricket. Kent have appointed former Australian international Jason Gillespie as interim assistant coach. The ex-Yorkshire head coach will stand in for Alan Donald. Gillespie left his job at Headingley at the end of last season, having won back-to-back county championship titles there in 2014 and 2015. That's the latest sports news powered by Talk Sport.
Talk Radio. John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
And yes, a slightly different show for you this afternoon, discussing the events of yesterday, of course. Now, we were mentioning earlier, and I can give you an update on this. I did say that if you are a terrorist and you're listening to the programme this afternoon, then, you know, it's all very well, isn't it, attacking people in the way that you do and that you have. And your knowledge must be such that it's not going to achieve anything. It is pointless. And you're not a lone wolf, by the way. You're a lone arsehole, right? That's the point I'm making. But if you want to call in and explain to us exactly why you think driving a car at people and stabbing a police officer, right, is going to change the Western values and going to begin a caliphate, it isn't, right? It's a pointless act. There's no point to it whatsoever. But if you want to tell me why you think it'll work, and you're a terrorist and you're listening and you have the balls, 0344 499 1000, that's the number. Right, on the line now, Michael Smith, MBE, former Met police officer. Good afternoon, Michael, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, John.
Right, now First of all, you know, I'm sure you're up to date with where we are on this. We've just been hearing in the news that a man has been held for driving at a crowd in Antwerp in Belgium. A vehicle with French number plates driven at high speed towards their main shopping street. No reports of injuries. It seems to have been diffused before, thankfully, anyone was hurt. But we know yesterday, of course, one of the casualties, a police officer. You're a former Met police officer. What happens? How does it feel when you lose one of your own, Michael?
Well, first, John, let me just say my sincere condolences from everyone at my charity Word for Weapons to the family of Keith. Not somebody I've known personally, but it affects us the same way.
Yeah.
When we see this happening, it's a real disaster. It's a disaster when anyone is killed anywhere. And it's a sad indictment that this is what's happening now around the world, not just in London, not just in Antwerp, in Belgium, places in France. But it's one of the methods that the terrorists are now using to try and cause major disruption across the globe.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, they're cowards. They are cowards. They haven't got the front to come up and do anything face to face. They're mowing down people on Westminster Bridge, mowing them down through the shopping markets around the world. You know, we've just got to be a bit smarter how we operate. That's what we've got to be.
In terms of how policemen feel when any tragedy happens, let alone involving the death of a police officer, what's the feeling amongst officers on the ground, such as Keith Palmer yesterday? You know, when he goes to work, does he feel prepared to deal with something like this? What's the training like nowadays and how is it approached?
Well, on a personal note, from running the charity Word for Weapons Anti-Knife and Gun Crime charity, I feel personally really, it hurts, it pains to the heart. And I've got to say, it brings tears to my eyes when I see young people murdered and stabbed, and when I see one of my former colleagues murdered in this way, in whichever way they're murdered, it really does pain, it does bring on the pain. And I imagine that could have been me. You know, thank God I've retired now. But, you know, when I think the days I've left my wife and children at home and I've gone out to work, and what could have been myself, I could have been stabbed, I could have not come home that day. And I have no real... nobody really has any concept unless you've actually been there. What it's like to be the wife or the children that now receives that information that your dad or your mum is not coming home. When they only went to work, they went to work to do a job. They went to work to stand outside Parliament and, you know, perhaps greet people at the gate, give directions, give instructions and steer people from one place to another. And now as a result, he's not coming home. Mm. You know, I feel it. I feel it for his family and I feel it for my former colleagues, because as much as you go out to work to do your job, you know that this potentially could happen. You know you may not come home. But you're not expecting that. That's the difference. You know, you think at the end, like, oh, I'll be all right. I hopefully will be able to come up. But you're not expecting it.
Is there a resilience and a stoicism amongst officers when this happens? So the feeling today in the Met, and indeed all around the country, because every force will be feeling it, you know, they're all going to work on a day when this has happened. And is it a sort of almost a, sounds terrible, doesn't it, but a bonding moment where people just go, okay, this is us, and this is how we're going to deal with it as collectively?
Yeah, you get to the point where you think we've got to be more united. The intelligence has got to be more more strategic. It's got to be more relevant. You sort of take a stock on how you do things, how you measure your security, what you will do in the future. How would you do things differently? All those things you have to take into account. But it does bring a closer bond between police officers at that time, not just in London, but I reckon across the country and across the world.
Rightly so. Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, Theresa May, of course, hailed Keith Palmer as a hero this morning in the Commons. This is a man, as you say, going out to do his job, not knowing what is going to happen. The reports we do know, you know, he was just first in line to try and stop this guy getting into Parliament, just doing his job, and sadly, of course, was stabbed by this man who was then shot by other officers. In terms of the makeup of the officers around that, I mean, I'll admit, I didn't realise that there were unarmed officers outside Parliament. I'd kind of assumed, as a matter of course, that it was all armed officers, but that's obviously not the case.
Well, I didn't realise that the ones at the gates were not armed either, because I was very surprised. You know, I've been up to Parliament a couple of times, but I've never worked there. So I was surprised at that, the gate that they weren't actually on.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the British police force has always prided itself on being able to communicate with people without necessarily having a firearm as at the forefront, not walking around with a gun at our chest. So that makes us approachable. That makes the police officers in the UK approachable. As many other countries you can go, you wouldn't want to approach a police officer.
All right.
I've been to France and... I've had not incidences, but on the way back, travelling with a Jewish instrument in my baggage, they were quite rude to me, and I thought, you know what, I'm not going to say anything to these guys. They got guns, and I wasn't going to, you know.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see, as a result of incidents like this, and the more common they become, and the more the threat level increases, are we just going to end up with police armed in this country, like in America?
I think we will do. It's been talked about. You know, when I came into the police in 1993, if I came into it before that, I came into the city in 1991.
Yeah.
And there was talk of police being routinely armed back then. And I'm glad that it didn't come in during my service, but I've got to be honest, as much as I run an anti-knife and gun crime charity, I've said in other radio interviews, it is going to come to the UK. Police officers are going to be routinely armed, and they're not necessarily going to be with taser. It will be with firearms.
All right, thank you. Michael.
It will be with a Glock, or it will be with others.
All right, Michael Smith, MBE, former Met police officer, of course, runs that charity he was talking about there. Very interesting stuff. He, as a former police officer, thinks that police officers will be routinely armed in the future. It's going to be the future we're looking at. What we are looking at, of course, is rolling news. Now, I can tell you that this is the third victim has now been named in yesterday's attack. This is an American man. Kurt Cochran from Utah in the States has been named as the third victim. Aisha Freid, of course, the college worker, was named earlier. And, of course, we know about Keith Palmer, the policeman. But that is the third victim has been identified as Kurt Cochran, an American tourist who was on Westminster Bridge. Rolling news. We've been talking about it. We're part of it. I don't know whether we're part of the problem. Here we are doing it. We're just doing what we can. But I am asking the question, I don't know that I'm even doing the right thing. I'll be brutally honest with you. I've got no idea. Because is rolling news actually what the terrorists rely on in order to get publicity? Brian Groom is on the phone, former Senior Financial Times editor. He knows about rolling news and the nature of the 24-hour reporting. Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Are we part of the problem, Brian?
I don't think so, no. And I think there are dangers in rolling news, yes. I mean, I think the people running rolling news channels have got to behave with sensitivity, in particular when handling incidents of this kind, and not allow speculation or even analysis to get ahead of the facts as they're becoming known. And have to win the trust and have to be sensitive to the fact that people are being hurt and killed and that people are afraid. But I think if they do that, and if, as long as the authorities are giving out as much information as openly as they can regularly, then I think it probably helps to contain panic and mass fears over incidents of this kind rather than the opposite.
It's an interesting. I mean, we've been talking a lot about it this afternoon because, as I say, we're sort of part of that media machine. And if we go down the route of saying, well, look, the terrorists, the only thing they're going to get out of this is coverage, really. They're not going to bring down the West by doing this kind of thing. They're not going to establish a caliphate in Britain, you know, or anywhere else in the West. All they're getting is publicity. It's all they want. So aren't we just feeding? If we ignored it completely, I mean, I'm not saying they'd stop doing it, but what would be the point?
True, but I cannot foresee a situation in which the media in any way could ignore a terrorist attack in London and not tell people what was going on. I think that if you want to spread panic, that'd be a classic way to do it. I think it's just, we've had rolling news for almost 30 years now, and it's kind of, it's expected by the, it's hard to remember a time before it happened.
Rolling News, we inherited, I guess, it was in America far before it was in Britain, is that right?
Indeed, certainly was.
What were the origins of it in America? Just cable channels, presumably, was it initially?
Yeah, cable, it was a cable news thing, so places like CNN in America started for the UK, and then we had Sky News coming along here at the end of the 1980s, and the... the BBC launching its news channel. So it's been around for, let's say, for the UK for nearly 30 years, and for the US for an awful lot longer than that. But interestingly, it no longer has a monopoly on instantaneous news. Yesterday, I didn't look at rolling news once. I had some other work to do, so I was, every half hour or so, I checked Twitter and a couple of news websites, and that kept me abreast of what was happening. So it's coming to you from all kinds of angles now.
You make it a very interesting point, and I was wondering about that, because rolling news, it can't be as fast as social media and people on the scene, can it? That's the point. So, are we getting to a point where rolling news will become redundant, by which I mean, and again, it's people journalism, isn't it? And of course, you've got to verify it and all that stuff. But if people like you are turning away from rolling news to social media for the updates, and indeed the internet, is there a need for rolling news as we have it at the moment?
As we have it at the moment, I think there is a need. I mean, social media is useful at getting new angles out quickly. You can find out what different news outlets are saying without having to check them all individually. But social media does not validate what you're reading. You'd still turn to a trusted news source if you want. You want to see whether it's the BBC or Sky or somebody else reporting this as fact, and what are they citing as evidence for that? So, it's maybe frustrating for people in rolling news not always to be the first with a particular angle.
Yeah,
but they have to win and keep the trust of the people watching and listening to it. So that does mean being very careful with how you report rumour in particular and how you validate that.
It also strikes me, the final point really on this, in that, having watched rolling news, it's on in the background in the office, certainly. And we're probably guilty of it too on the radio, although we're trying not to be. But certainly yesterday, I guess it happened, news doesn't move fast enough, really, for rolling news. So what you end up getting is just repeats of the same images, repeats of the same reporters saying the same thing. A lot of speculation and reporters filling for time, it seems to me. And 24-hour rolling news you could probably do in a 10-hour rolling news programme without all of the repeats and the speculation. Or is that just part of the beast?
It's always been its weakness, and it still is. And I guess it's more of a weakness on days when nothing happens than you have nothing happen repeatedly on rolling news, and people just glaze over. It's maybe on in the background, nobody listens to it, and it's difficult for it to pick out highlights and to grab your attention when something does happen. But I think when we get something like yesterday, I think it's still pretty useful.
Okay. Brian Groom there, on the nature of 24-hour news, quite interesting. I think, and like I said, we are part of it, so we are feeding that same machine. But I hope this afternoon we are bringing you some slightly different angles. In fact, that was incredibly meta, because we've just analysed what we're doing ourselves, which is slightly weird. But anyway, I think it's a valid point. He makes a valid point. Former Senior Financial Times editor. Right, Talk Radio in the afternoons. Now, we are suspending normal programming. You've probably spotted that already, because what we normally do in the afternoons isn't like this. However, we think today that would have been the wrong thing to do, and we think this is the right thing to do as we talk about the terror attack on London. We'll be bringing you a lot of coverage of it, as I say, from slightly different angles. Next, joining me in the studio, David Baddiel is here. He's going to be plugging something, that's fine, but we'll also be talking to him, getting his thoughts on the nature of whether you can be funny at times like this, and comedy in general, I think. 2:22 now, David Baddiel joining us next. I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio, 24-hour radio debate and entertainment.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Taking care of business on Talk Radio with Exporting is great. If you're a small or medium-sized business owner, you can't afford to miss Talk Radio's expert guide to exporting. From market research to resource management, logistics to local lingo, get essential advice on expanding your product or services overseas. Taking care of business on the Paul Ross Full Set Breakfast on Talk Radio. Take the next step towards exporting. Visit great.gov.uk. The demand is out there. You should be too.
The new TradePoint catalogue is out now, with a huge range of trade products and brands at low trade prices. Grab a copy for your van in one of our 290 stores nationwide today. TradePoint. Trade brands, trade prices, trade only.
Do you know how much you've won?
I can't believe it.
You've won £1 million. That's amazing.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Jill is just one of the lucky millionaires made in the Lotto raffle. In every Lotto draw, £1 million must be won. Play makes it possible. Games, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 16 or over.
All right, Steve.
Devastated. She's gone and I'm lost without her. We've been together years.
Yeah, but...
You can't rely on them.
You'll find another one, mate. Between you and me, I always thought she was a bit butch.
Hey, I'm talking about my old van.
I thought you meant Verity.
Me wife. Butch.
Oh, well. Either way, you can pick something up with a few less miles on the clock.
At Van Monster, every van is covered by our price match promise, our unique 5-day money-back guarantee, and includes a 6-month warranty. Terms and conditions apply. Find your perfect work partner at vanmonster.com.
Right now, at the perfume shop, save £13 off the RRP on a 30ml bottle of Paco Rabanne Lady Million, just £29.99. Visit us in-store or shop online at theperfumeshop.com. The Perfume Shop, 25 years of making perfect scents for Mother's Day. Offer while stocks last, valid from the 23rd to the 26th of March.
When a stroke strikes, the damage spreads like a fire in the brain. When you spot any single one of the signs, think and act fast. F, face. Has it fallen on one side? A, arms. Can they raise them? S, speech. Is it slurred? T, time to dial 999. The faster you act, the better their chances. So even if you're not sure, act fast. Make the call. Dial 999.
Don't miss our trade-exclusive, one-week-only catalogue launch deals, like 10% off all tiling, flooring and Leyland trade paint. See in-store or online for more. Hurry, offers end Sunday 26th of March. TradePoint, trade brands, trade prices, trade only.
TradePoint!
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
Through Cheshire at the moment, the M6 northbound at junction 17, we've got one lane closed off. It is due to an accident, two cars and a van involved, so do be careful and approach to that. Through Hampshire, the M3 northbound, we've got a broken down vehicle between junction 10 and junction 9. That's blocking one lane, but traffic's okay. In the M6 northbound, a bit of traffic still, and that's if you're coming from Birmingham at junction 6, heading up to Great Bar at junction 7. I'm Poonam Verma.
Oh, look, it's a postcard from Steve and Lou. Having a wonderful time in Ibiza, very hot, wish you were here. And happy birthday, Mike. Best wishes. And if you get poorly, get well soon. All the best, SNL.
Like getting your money's worth? Enjoy the delicious 99p mayo chicken, part of the McDonald's Saver menu. From 10:30 a.m, price and participation may vary.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
It is Talk Radio. Good afternoon. I am John Holmes. And yes, ordinary programming more or less suspended this afternoon out of what we normally do to continue to bring you coverage of yesterday's terror attack on Westminster. A lot of interesting guests on the programme today. We've already spoken to many. The next one, no exception. I'll be honest with you, it is a bit of a PR exercise dressed up as an interview. But it's David Baddiel in the studio. Hello.
Hello, John. Thank you for your honesty as ever.
Again, the listeners aren't stupid.
No, you're not, but let's alienate them a bit more. Why not?
I want to talk to you, and I think we are going to talk a little bit about what's been happening, in the world. Mm. But the other thing, you were telling me you were tired, and I was like, why are you tired? And the reason is, you were doing a warm-up gig for the show you're about to do in London again.
Yeah.
But a show you're really, 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 really proficient at, which is a really highly acclaimed show. Mm. Why are you doing a warm-up for it?
Well, it was in Andover as well, which is in Hampshire, so I didn't get back till about 1 o'clock in the morning. The real reason for doing it is I haven't done it for a few months. I did a run in London of this show that ended in November, so I haven't done it for a few months, so just to remind me. But the other reason, and this is the stupid thing, is I decided to try out some new material. Now, the show is, it works, and it's doing well, and people seem to like it, and it's already 2 hours and 10 minutes or something. So where am I going to find time for some new material? Trouble is, it all kind of worked as well. So now I just think, oh, now I don't know what to do. And also just meant I was back later as well.
Yes.
Because I'd tried out 20 minutes of new material. I don't know why, but I think, you know, I enjoy doing the show. And it feels to me like, because it's very personal to me, that if I sort of find out something new, because it's about my mum and dad to some extent, and particularly with my mum, there are things about, she had a slightly not very secret life in which she was... I say not very secret because she was quite proud of it and tended to tell people about it, where she was having an affair with a golfing memorabilia salesman for quite a lot of the time during her marriage to my dad. And that, a lot of the comedy of the show comes from that. And I keep on finding out more stuff about that as time goes on, partly because I do the show and people turn out know about the subterranean golfing memorabilia world and they'll tell me things. And then I think, oh, I've got to put that in the show.
Oh, that's kind of perfect for comedy. Golfing memorabilia and, of
that's
all
it.
Things.
I mean, it was unbelievably brilliant. I mean, well, the thing is, my mum, as part of her obsession with this bloke, became obsessed with golf.
Yeah.
Never played golf, but became obsessed with golf and golfing memorabilia and turned our house over to a kind of shrine to golf. Yeah. And at the time, I think it was very confusing and probably damaging, but now I think it's hilarious. So that's a lot to do with why I want to do a show about it. But as I say, I find out, because I discovered yesterday, on my way to this gig, a copy of Golfing Illustrated from 1980 that had a big interview with my mum in it that I'd never seen before, because I just found it in a box of stuff from her house.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, I'm going to talk about this tonight.
Yeah.
Because obviously it adds to the story.
And is that a case of, as you say, when you find these different aspects to it, I mean, you could end up with Sarah Cox's 24-hour dance-a-thon comedy version.
About golfing memorabilia. I don't know how much money that would raise.
You've got to draw a line somewhere.
You have to draw a line. Anyway, so I was doing the show mainly just to get it back under my belt, and it was, in fact, a very enjoyable night.
Yeah, good. And it's running in London...
It's running in London from the 28th of March, reprieving at the Playhouse Theatre for 10 weeks, I believe.
Yeah, My Family, Not the Sitcom. All right, look, stay with us, because we've got to go to news now, because Toby's here, and that's normally the way I realise we've got to go to news.
Hello, Toby.
So the man with the beard who just walked in...
Can I say something?
...is Toby.
Yes, to David, am I allowed to say this?
Rabbi?
All my life, I've had people tell me that I am a... younger, slightly, I'm afraid, look-alike of you.
Yeah. Do they actually say younger?
I mean...
No, that's a serious question.
Well, I'm often asked, is David Baddiel your dad?
Oh,
is actually what I'm often asked.
Oh, that's awful. See, I'm hoping that you weren't going to say that, because one of the things I think about being a look-alike... I have about 2 or 3 actual professional look-alikes. I don't know how much work they get. If you're out there, I'm sorry. But I have some... And one thing I've
noticed... It's not the line that I've gone down, as you can tell.
Well, one thing I've noticed about them, because occasionally I've Googled them, I've seen their image, certainly the professional photograph, is me in 1996. Because whenever you are like most famous as a famous person, that is, you're enshrined forever in a kind of aspect for that. So that's why people might say that about you.
Possibly.
How old are you?
32.
Well, there you go, you see.
He doesn't look anything like you.
Well, there is that as well.
Literally looks more like Rob Newman.
He's dark and a beard. Dark and he's got a beard. You haven't got glasses, have you?
No.
Well, that's rubbish. Have glasses. Okay. That's rule
I'm glad
one.
To have it official that we don't look alike from the man himself.
Well, I could have told you. Anyway, listen, David deals with us this afternoon. We're going to be talking, we mentioned this earlier on in the programme, it's a fascinating area, is how do you be funny about stuff like what's been happening in the news. I know David's got some thoughts on it. We're also going to be talking to Steve Punt later, your old colleague, of course, the Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Yeah, brilliant.
About a similar thing. But it's just after 2:30. Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes. Toby's got the latest news now.
Talk Radio. Thank you. Good afternoon. The third victim of the Westminster attack has been named as the American tourist Kurt Cochran. The 54-year-old from Utah was killed on Westminster Bridge when a car was driven at speed into a number of people. It's emerged his wife has also been left with serious but not life-threatening injuries from the same attack. The couple were on a tour of Europe. It follows the identification earlier of 43-year-old Aisha Freid, who was also killed on the bridge, which has now been reopened whilst on her way to pick her children up from school. The final fatally injured victim was unarmed police officer PC Keith Palmer, who was stabbed whilst trying to stop the attacker getting into Parliament. Former Met police officer Michael Smith, MBE, told John, "The death of a colleague stirs up strong emotions for all those in the force.
Not somebody I've known personally, but it affects us the same way. When we see this happening, it's a real disaster. It's a disaster when anyone is killed anywhere. It's a sad indictment that this is what's happening around the world, not just in London, not just in Antwerp, places in France. but it's one of the methods the terrorists are now using to try and cause major disruption.
The Islamic State terror group has claimed to its network agency that the Westminster attacker was a soldier of the Islamic State. The man was British-born and known to MI5. Sajda Mughal was on the Tube, which was bombed in the London terror attack in July 2007. She now works combating Islamic extremism in the UK and insisted to Talk Radio the problem is slowly being beaten.
Being involved in this work and travelling the UK, we have moved further. I mean, I work specifically with the Muslim community, and all across the UK, I hear families, particularly women and mothers, saying, this is a problem, this is an issue, we need to protect our young ones, we need to protect our loved ones, and we need to protect society.
Eight people remain in custody after being arrested in overnight raids in London and Birmingham. Meanwhile, a similar type of attack has been foiled in Antwerp. Police say a driver was stopped as he tried to drive into a crowd at speed in one of the busiest shopping streets in the Belgian city. Now here's your weather. A fine afternoon for most, though wind and some rain in the south with a chill. Tonight will be dry and cold for many with a widespread frost. That southern wind and rain will hang around, though. This afternoon's high's 13 degrees Celsius.
Thank you very much, Toby. Hey, listen to Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
And Toby, of course, back every half an hour to bring us the latest on the unfolding aftermath, I suppose, of the Westminster terror attack. What do you make of it, David Baddiel, as a comedian, when stuff like this happens, and there are people, we've been talking about this a bit today, who say, well, you simply can't be funny about this kind of stuff. What would be your answer to that?
Well, that's a complicated thing, I think, to say to a comedian in general. I mean, you know, the show that I'm doing now is about, you know, my late mother and my dad's dementia. And obviously, you know, some people might say, oh, how can you be funny about that? But that's personal to me, and I can find ways of dealing with that. And I've always felt comedy is the number one way, really, of dealing with difficult stuff, because what else can you do with it at some extent? But with this, obviously, it's particularly when it's raw, it's really difficult, and no one would want to try and be funny about tragedy. But one thing I think that is good is to ridicule as much as possible the perpetrators.
Yes.
Ridicule is a brilliant thing to do to scum.
Yes.
To terrible, murderous, in their own mind, fighting for a nobler purpose, scum.
I will tell you this. Earlier on, as we started the show, in fact, I said, if there are any terrorists listening, then welcome. No one has so far, but welcome to call 03444991000, because I would actually like to know why they think driving a car across a bridge and then stabbing a policeman will actually bring down the West, when we all know it literally won't. And this whole lone wolf thing, which is what I'm directly
saying. Well, even
saying,
that, I don't really like lone wolf, because it makes them sound like a superhero.
Exactly. So I'm calling them lone arseholes.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in that, because I was looking for a swear word and I thought, well, we're on the radio, what can I say here? Because basically, that one. Okay, well, that'll do. Yeah. Because I was talking about this on Twitter. I don't know if this is an actual policy, but it seems like the name of the attacker has not been released. And I actually think that's really good, because the thing that these scum are looking for, I think, are above everything else. There's lots of other stupid reasons in their own heads, but it's fame, it's notoriety, it's for them to be sort of, to give their empty lives some kind of meaning, and fame, even in death, will do that. And so it's a good thing not to give them names, and therefore you could just say a lunatic arsehole did this, and in a way it'd be better for that always to be the case, and for this lunatic arsehole's name never to be released.
Yeah, I completely agree. And in terms of how approaching them, because there are TV programmes, you know, currently the Nightly Show, terrible though it might be, is...
I've been on it.
I know. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it was alright. Yeah.
So, speaking of atrocities... but how would the... I think they pulled it last night, but I don't even think it was...
No, it wasn't because of my performance.
That's a coincidence.
Yeah.
And I know Matt Ford, a comedian who does a political show on Dave, they pulled his show last night as well.
Okay.
And I'm not
sure about those doing that. I mean, maybe, I can understand if you've got a whole lot of material that isn't suitable for that time to come out. But as you may know, there's a very famous... edition, I think, of The Daily Show, where Jon Stewart, just after 9/11, went on and did a very, very heartfelt, I think unscripted, monologue about how he felt as a New Yorker about what had just happened. And obviously that isn't comedy anymore, no, but I don't think there's any reason why in that space someone who happens to mainly make people laugh can't talk about his or her feelings and that be really a vital and moving and a good thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right. And I always think as well, it's part of the comedian's job and the comedy writer's job to tackle these things, to give people that release valve in a way. And I used to be very impressed how Spitting Image used to do the hard stories. And Private Eye still do it fairly well now. You know, they won't flinch from putting one of these images that we're seeing today on the cover and coming up with a clever way of dealing
with
it.
But I think the thing is, you know, there is an anger towards what's happened. And I think, you know, there is no comedy in the tragedy, but there might be a way of finding, of introducing comedy to the anger, because I think, you know, these people, they should be satirised, because if you take them seriously, then to some extent they have won, because they're trying to inject seriousness into their meaningless lives. So don't make as much fun of them as we possibly can.
Yeah. Speaking of comedy, Comic Relief, of course, tomorrow.
Yeah. And the film tonight, though. Never mind tomorrow, because I'm not on that, because I'm doing a gig tomorrow in, I believe, Maidenhead.
Maidenhead.
I am.
Another warm-up. Yeah, it's 5 hours.
Another warm-up in Maidenhead. Never mind the thing that's happening on BBC One. But on BBC One tonight, something I did for Comic Relief, which is a good thing, I think. Me and Hugh Dennis.
He was in on Tuesday talking about it. So,
okay, Hugh Dennis and Michaela Cole. You know Michaela Cole, that's chewing gum. And Reggie Yates and Russell Kane and Katie Brand. I'll stop naming names in a minute because it was all those people. We drove in a convoy across Kenya and Uganda delivering supplies into Comet Relief projects, mainly actually mosquito nets to a school which suffered terribly from malaria. And what I'm hoping, I'll be honest with you, is that although it'll be inspiring and helpful and all those things, I think this film could be quite funny.
Yeah.
Because lots of funny stuff happened, and I was keen when I took the gig to say, look, I'm happy to help, but since we're all comedians, let's try and keep it funny and not just sad and inspiring, because I'll be honest with you, Comic Relief can get a bit like that sometimes.
Yeah,
sometimes
Comic
Relief can be like, oh, here's a wacky moment, but here, let's talk seriously. And I think, fine, but hey, it is comedy, so let's be funny.
Yeah. Hugh Dennis said I had to ask you about your terrible, terrible sat-nav skills involving driving the wrong way up a...
Yeah, but that's partly his
fault. He blamed you.
It's partly his fault because he didn't like me driving. He didn't really want me to drive, so I had to be the navigator because we didn't have a sat-nav. So I did say, go left at this point, and he said, you sure? I said, yeah, definitely go left. And then we were driving essentially the wrong way on a Kenyan motorway. And then I don't know if he said this, we got stopped by the Kenyan police. Right? And the Kenyan policeman was really like quite cross and saying, you are idiots and you would have died. And then I think he was going to take us into a police cell. And I did, you're not going to believe this, but I did say the phrase, we're from the BBC. It was suddenly like, it was 1913 or whatever, it was 1942. I tried it, it didn't make any difference. Not even saying, this bloke, he's from Outnumbered. That didn't work either. Didn't work at all. The Now Show I could have mentioned.
You could have mentioned that, yeah.
I'm sorry to mention the Now Show.
Thanks for bringing that up, David.
Sorry to bring that up, John. But yeah, but eventually he let us go. He was very nice, the Kenyan policeman, we got away with it. But it was a bad moment.
All right. Listen, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Much appreciated. So that's tonight on BBC One at 9.
Red Nose Convoy. The Red Nose African Convoy is at 9 o'clock on BBC One.
And My Family Not the Sitcom.
It's at the Playhouse Theatre from the 28th of March for 10 weeks.
Olivier Award nominated.
Olivier Award nominated. Would you believe it?
Yeah, no. right. Thank you so much. I haven't seen it yet, so I might believe it afterwards.
Yeah, you might do.
Are you going to do a 5-hour version when I come?
No, I'm not. No. Okay. Not unless I get inspired by the spirit of Laurence Olivier in Henry V.
Good. Forward to that. Good to talk to you, though. Thank
Cheers.
You. David.
Thank Badil you,
there coming joining us on the programme. Now, still to come, of course, we're dropping ordinary programming, as you will have noticed this afternoon, to keep you up to date with exactly what's going on regarding the aftermath of the Westminster terror attacks yesterday. Steve Punt will be joining us, actually, to talk a little bit. Sort of expand on that about how to write comedy for programmes like Mock the Week when situations like this crop up. Steve Punt. Written for you to work with David, of course, with the Mary Whitehouse experience, but it's a very experienced writer who knows how to do that kind of thing. We also want to go around the country a bit because I'm aware that this is all a bit London centric, okay? And I can't really make any apology for that because, let's be honest, the terror attacks happened in London yesterday. And as I said, walking around London, there was a very, very as normal atmosphere, and certainly the same this morning. No one's being defiant. Everyone's just going to work and getting on with it, which is kind of the point. However, how does it affect people who aren't living in London and aren't from London? Do they care as much as the media seem to, given the media is technically based in London, generally speaking? We want to talk about that. We're going to be talking to Ken Livingstone as well, who'll be joining us on the programme. Former Mayor of London, of course. Now, how does he react to it? How is it different to when he was mayor and the 2005 terrorist bombings happened? And he was in Singapore. He wasn't even in his city. He's coming in. We'll talk to him in around an hour's time. Talk Radio in the afternoon. I'm John Holmes.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
We are Talk.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip.
Don't do the every day on Talk Radio with the Royal Navy Reserve.
It's a beautiful sunny day here in Plymouth, and I'm on a giant parade ground about the size of two or three football pitches, and I'm watching nine Royal Navy Reserves starting their parade training. I'm going to have a go in a minute, doing left, right, left, right. I've got no coordination, though. Is it difficult?
It's not difficult, no, providing you know which is left from right and which way you are looking. So if you're stood on the end, make sure you look to the guy next to you. But ultimately, if you can go left, right in your head, you can do it.
Hooray! Stand at ease!
It's something that you can get good at. Like, I know people who go to work and then practice in the spare time, and all their friends are like, what are you doing? It's very rewarding when you get it right. Out of all the stuff we're doing over these 2 weeks, drill is my favourite bit.
Don't do the every day on Talk Radio with the Royal Navy Reserve.
Introducing Domino's new walk-in wins. Buy one, get one free. Any size pizza at any time when you pop in store. And with click and collect, your order's raring to go when you arrive. Two delicious Domino's pizzas for the price of one with new walk-in wins. So just strut in, save time and bog off. Participating store subject to availability. See dominoes.co.uk.
And it's all change in the new season of Formula One on Channel 4. With new rules, faster cars, wider tyres, louder engines, fresh rivalries, quicker laps and closer races.
Race into the unknown. Formula One starts this weekend on Channel 4.
Become a local hero like Chris. He's an electrician. He joined Local Heroes, an online service that matches customers with trusted plumbers, electricians and heating engineers.
Local Heroes send me the jobs and I take the ones that work for me. Plus, it's really easy to use and free to join.
Chris is right. There's no sign-up fee. Dodgy lights, leaky taps, no heating. There's a local hero for that, and you could be one of them. Visit localheroes.com and join hundreds of trusted tradesmen. Local Heroes, a British Gas innovation.
When you're building a great business, only one thing really matters. People. And for the best people, you need the job site used by more UK candidates than any other. Find your people today at Indeed.com. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
Well, the M6 northbound at the moment got one lane closed off due to an accident. That's between junction 16 at Stoke-on-Trent and junction 17. So that's going to add about 20 minutes to your journey. Also through Lancashire, the M6 northbound, the exit slip road is closed off. A lorry has shed its load there at junction 29. The traffic seems to be coping fairly well. And the M6 northbound, some busy traffic still through the roadworks from 6 at Birmingham up to junction 7 at Great Bar. I'm Poonam Verma.
Great news, Mrs. Wilkes. For her first swimming lesson, she did very well. Didn't you, Josie?
Yes, I swam all on my own, Mummy.
Good girl. And does she also learn the reverse 1.5 somersaults in the pike position?
Like getting your money's worth? Grab a tasty double cheeseburger. Just £1.49 from the McDonald's Saver menu. From 10:30 a.m, price and participation may vary.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon to you. I am John Holmes. It is Talk Radio. And just a quick update, no terrorist has called us yet. I have, issued an invitation. If you are a terrorist listening to this programme this afternoon, then, you know, it's all very well driving cars across bridges and stabbing people, isn't it? But where, if you've got any kind of balls, why don't you call us 03444991000 if there are, you know, lone arseholes, and you are one, by the way, if you are listening, why not give us a call and explain why you're an arsehole and exactly what you think you're going to achieve by doing those kinds of things, because it ain't going to bring down the West and it ain't going to form any form of caliphate, all right? So it's a waste of time. You're wasting everybody's time. Okay. If one calls, I will, of course, let you know. The programme continues. We're suspending ordinary programming. It's not what we do of a weekday afternoon, but it's what we're doing today. Talking about yesterday's terror attack, I hope in a slightly different way. That was very interesting from David Baddiel there, talking about the nature of comedy and how you tackle it and how we should be laughing, not at tragedy, but at the people behind this, because it demeans what they're doing. And I think he makes a very good point. The problem, though, of course, is radicalisation. That's what leads people to do this kind of stuff. On the line to talk to us a little bit about it, Ismail Lee South, director of the Salem Project. Good afternoon, hello, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon to you, sir, and thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, tell us what the Salem Project is for a start.
Basically, the Salem Project is a project started up by converts and reverts to Islam of white British and Afro-Caribbean origin. And we first started to do projects and initiatives to empower, help with work and employment, training and enterprise. And then issues around radicalization came. So we do projects that challenge radicalization, and we do de-radicalization projects in schools, college, PRUs, prisons, and in communities.
So this is very important work, and that's for sure. The question is, though, for all the good work that you do, I already think I know the answer to this, but how can we prevent radicalization? Is it even possible?
It's possible. What there are certain issues, and if you don't mind, I'll explain the issues.
Do.
First of all, there are many different people who are doing de-radicalization work. Some are funded by the government, some are independently funded, and some are just doing it like they're working in 9-to-5 and they're doing it out of their own money, which is very admirable. What's the sad reality is most of these organizations don't work together. So the sad reality is that we need to get these organizations who are working in de-radicalization to work together. We recently organized a conference in February called Challenging Radicalization and Extremism Together, where we had different organizations, groups, statutory organizations, stakeholders coming together. But even though it was successful, the sad reality is there were many other organizations who refused to come because they were saying, we're this. There's a bit of an ego thing. So if there was, like, for example, a national radio conference, certain radio stations might go, but certain radio stations might say, no, we're too big to go. So
right.
We have that going on. Then you have issues of around schools and PRUs. Now, what it is, many teachers and youth workers, frontline staff, are not properly trained in de-radicalization. So what happens is, sometimes someone's saying, I'm going to scratch my, pardon me for all your lovely listeners, I'm going to scratch my bum. So if a teacher who's not good, who's not really acutely aware, oh my gosh, he says he's going to scratch his bum, and they refer him to prevent, and then there's bad publicity around that. So because of that now, you have some teachers who are against prevent, and they don't know really, they don't really know what they're doing, so they're not getting training.
Okay, well, it's interesting, you keep, we're talking about, and you're using the phrase de-radicalization, which, it's the very word suggests that it's taking someone that's radicalized and de-radicalizing them, but the problem is, of course, is not allowing them to be radicalized in the first place, presumably.
Definitely.
So how do we prevent that? Now, this, of course, I know, and your project deals with this kind of stuff, but it is about peer pressure, isn't it? It's about gang wanting to feel part of a community that they might not otherwise feel part of. It's about unemployment, I guess. Extremism can speak to people who have an empty space in their lives and speak to them in a way that perhaps their peers and their teachers cannot. How do you prevent young people from following a route that seems to glamorise this kind of stupid behaviour?
So in my opinion is we need to get more people who work in de-radicalisation into schools, colleges and prisons. We need to get them on a weekly/daily basis going in there and showing people that this extremism thing that you're seeing on the internet is not what it's supposed to be. Also, we need the major social media companies, i.e. if you don't mind me naming them, YouTube, Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they have so much extremist material on their pages.
Yeah.
It's terrible. So they need to liaise with statutory organizations and grassroots people who are working in the radicalization to take off this junk off their pages. So there's many, when you go on YouTube now, as you, I'm sure you're aware, there are all of the known hate preachers, which I won't name, they're all on YouTube. They're all on YouTube.
Well, that's in the news as well, of course, isn't it? Because various companies around the world are now pulling advertising from YouTube, which is owned by Google, because of this this hate culture, I suppose. That will give Google now an incentive to start tackling it in a bolder way. A question that I wanted to ask you, you know, because a lot of people, a lot of criticism about this is, okay, is it down to, fundamentally down to fundamental religious beliefs? And a lot of people saying, you know, this is the fault of religion. Is it the fault of religion?
No, not 100%. It's understanding of religion. As you know, within different religions, there's different interpretations. So what, so the people who are coming with the warped extremist ideology of Islam, they need to be challenged. And my personal opinion is they need to be, the people who are teaching this in the UK should be told, if you don't like it, leave. Go to Saudi Arabia,
Go
to Qatar, leave the country. I think this is my first opinion. The second opinion is many of the moderate sheikhs and scholars of credibility who could challenge them, the reality is a lot of them are too busy. That's a sad reality. They're too busy. They've got wife and kids to support. They've got to pay their mortgage or whatever. So we need my opinion is we need the government. This doesn't need to be funded by the government. This can be funded by the Muslim charities. If you look at the Charity Commission, Muslim charities raise over £1 billion a year. If Theresa May was to talk to the British Muslim charities to get them to fund it, they would fund it. We need to fund moderate scholars, British-born moderate Muslim scholars, and get them on the ground, get them into schools, and get them to properly explain the religion if there are any discrepancies.
Because it's people, isn't it? It's people taking the Quran and misinterpreting what it says and using what they, I don't know, think it says for their own ends and moulding the words of the Prophet there into something that it didn't necessarily mean. Is that yes, fair?
That's 100% true. And what it is sometimes, many of these guys are opportunists. Many of these hate preachers are opportunists because they use it as a way of getting an audience. Because if you know, as you, I'm sure, many people are not counting, there's issues around mental health. A lot of the people many of the people that you've seen getting arrested for extremism in Europe over the past 2 to 3 years, it's through social media and mental health.
Okay.
Would be over 65-70% of the time. So there needs to be issues around mental health. There needs to be mental health initiatives within the mosques. We need to get the mosques more open and involved within the communities. It shouldn't just be an old people's club. They need to, the money that they're getting for the big chandeliers, which look nice and pretty, don't get me wrong, they need to reinvest that money into youth clubs. Get the youth people in there and to engage with statutory organizations, grassroots people. And like I said before, we need to challenge radicalization online. On social media, it's terrible. Young people are spending their time at least 5-6 hours a day on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, watching junk. And sometimes many of them say, oh, let me just look at this funny junk. And some of them, most of them say, oh, it's a load of rubbish, and they leave it. But you do get a small percentage who carry on watching. We need to take them down on our pages, and we need YouTube to stop recruiting people who are not qualified, don't have the understanding of extremism, to deal with it and deal and engage with people who know and who have expertise in these topics, and to take these things down from their pages.
All right, thank you very much indeed. That's Ishmael Lee South, director of the Salaam project. I somehow called that the Salem project due to a typo at the beginning of that. I do apologise. But I thought it was very interesting indeed, because, you know, radicalisation, big issue. He knows what he's talking about. A lot of it happening online, but we'd kind of expect that. But, you know, he's doing what he can, and there he was calling for more funding for it. You know how it's all gone a bit London-centric? I mean, I apologise for that? I don't know. It's a London story. But if you're not in London and you're listening to Talk Radio this afternoon, and indeed all day, you're probably thinking, oh, God, London again. The attack was in London. We can't make an apology in that sense because that's where it happened. However, let's not forget, you know, that there's the rest of the country out there. Do they care as much if you live somewhere else that's not London? You know, does this touch you in quite the same way? I don't know. There's a lot of references to Londoners and London this and London's attitude that. I don't live in London. I live in Canterbury in Kent. I just work in London, right? And someone who does exactly that lives in Norfolk, works in London, was in London yesterday. Sarah Layton, she's a consultant to the legal industry. She's on the telephone. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. I mean this in the best possible way, sir. I wanted to talk to a normal person. We've heard a lot from experts, and we've heard a lot about everything that's going on, and I just wanted to talk to somebody not from London. And so, you know, thank you for taking the time to do it. You're not from London. You travel into London, but you're not from here. Are you connected to it as a Londoner is?
I used to live in London about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I currently live in Norfolk. And when it happened yesterday, I was just packing to come down here for a couple of days for work. So, heard about it and, you know, was about to make my way into London.
Yep.
When it happened. And I must say that the first thing, obviously, is it's a tragedy. The second thing was logistics about getting in and getting around. Aside from that, coming in and being in Trafalgar Square today, there's heightened police, but I haven't seen, which is great about London, I haven't seen a climate of fear.
No.
Everybody tends to, you know, get on with things, and there's a great unity. I came through Tooting Underground this morning, and they've got the sign saying "United we stand, divided we fall."
Yeah, it's. I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? And in terms of your friends, family in Norfolk, what that don't come into London, for example, what is their attitude to it? Because as I say, we live, you know, in a media bubble that's just banging on and on about London and the Londoners and the London way and all that. And I get the impression that must be just quite irritating for someone listening to this, you know, living on the Scottish borders or in Wales or, you know, in Nuneaton in Warwickshire, just think, well, you know, it's London, shut up about it for a bit. What's the sense of friends and family who are from or in Norfolk regarding this?
Well, I can only speak to my own friends and family.
Mm.
And for them, it's still, we're very much the same country. So, yes, we are apart from what's happening, but you care. You might not care in the same way of, you know, changing your daily patterns or being part of it in that way. But, you know, I think it's still something that, you know, people are talking about, and that people, you know, are concerned and would like to be able to help and offer unity if they can.
Yeah, all right. Well, listen, thank you. We're sort of run out of time now. I've got to go to the news, Sarah. But that's Sarah Layton. She used to live in London, doesn't anymore, lives in Norfolk, family and friends in Norfolk, of course. And I just thought it was interesting to get a point of view of someone with family and friends that aren't in London and how they feel about it. And that's interesting, you know, it is that sense of unity, but from a slightly different angle. Still much to come in the next hour. We are here till 4 o'clock. Steve Punt, the writer and comedian, will be joining us after the news at 3 o'clock. And also Ken Livingstone, former mayor, of course, of London. Now, he was mayor of London 2000 to 2008, I think. And it was 2005 during his tenure. That, of course, the tragic event of 2005 happened in London. He wasn't even in London at the time. He was in Singapore. I want to know how he felt being so detached from his city. I think he'll have a lot to say on it. We'll also try and get him to talk about his recent Jeremy Corbyn comments, and who knows, he might mention Hitler. It's just coming up to, well, it's 3 o'clock now, after the ads, Toby will have the news. You're listening to Talk Radio, normal programming suspended in the sense of we're not doing what we normally do, just to keep you up to date, really, on all the events around and the issues concerning the Westminster terror attack. And we'll continue to bring you that throughout the day here on Talk Radio. I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio.
We got entertainment and we're not afraid to use it. Talk Radio.
Do you dream of being part of a more exciting fleet?
Where to, mate?
Spending your spare time with an interesting new crew. If you've got ambitions that go beyond the everyday, listen to the Paul Russ Full Set Breakfast on Talk Radio and learn more about serving in the Royal Navy Reserve. Develop new skills, expand your horizons, and experience challenges and opportunities you won't find in your day job. The Paul Russ Full Set Breakfast tomorrow morning from 6 on Talk Radio. Don't do the everyday, every day. Search Royal Navy Reserve.
Did you know there's some poor fella in America who's been struck by lightning 10 times in 12 years? 10 times. Imagine that.
But if he played Monopoly Win-Win at McDonald's, his luck might change. With even more ways to play this year and incredible stuff to win, from millions of McDonald's food prizes to 20 Mini Coopers, anyone can be lucky. End 2nd of May. Selected items in UK restaurants from 10:30 a.m. subject to availability. Over 16 to play. Purchase necessary except in Northern Ireland. For price conditions and other rules, see mcdonalds.co.uk/monopoly and in restaurants. Have I got
PPI? Want to know if you've had PPI? Find out with our free PPI check. Stephen Saunders from Nottingham received £1,856 on his credit card.
I wasn't sure whether I paid PPI on my credit card. Stanton Fisher did everything for me and took control of the claim. I would happily recommend Stanton Fisher to friends and family.
So text CHECK to 80800 for your free PPI check. Have I got PPI.com? That's CHECK to 80800.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the trade go.
At Selco Builders Warehouse, we've got real deals on a wide range of trade quality building products. In March, we've got a Passload IM360 CI lithium ion framing nailer for an amazing £349.99 XVAC with free next day delivery when you buy online. Now that's a real deal. See selcobw.com for even more real deals and to find your nearest branch.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the trade go.
At 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, the 25th of March, millions of people across the world are coming together for WWF's Earth Hour. And it all begins with the flick of a switch. 1 hour where the world turns off their lights. 1 hour to show your support for our beautiful planet. 1 hour that connects us all. Sign up now and join hundreds of millions around the world for WWF's Earth Hour. Saturday, the 25th of March at 8:30 p.m. Search WWF to find out more.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A radio star is born.
You're going to love
Talk Radio. Talk Radio.
It is Talk Radio, just after 3 o'clock. Good afternoon, I'm John Holmes. Here's Toby with the latest news.
Thank you. Coming up, third terror victim identified. IS claims responsibility and attacker was British born.
Talk Radio.
It's emerged the first fatally injured victim of the London terror attack was an American on a tour of Europe with his wife. Talk Radio's Pete Abbott has more.
54-year-old Kirk Cochran from Utah was hit by the car driven at high speed on the southern edge of Westminster Bridge and died of his injuries. He'd already visited Holland, Germany, Scotland and Ireland on a tour of the continent with his wife to celebrate their 25th anniversary. They were due to return home next week. Kirk's wife, Melissa Payne Cochran, was also hit by the attacker and is in hospital with a broken leg and rib, but is expected to make a full recovery.
Mr. Cochran is the final victim to have been named publicly. Earlier, 43-year-old Aisha Frayed, who was killed on her way to pick her children up from school, was identified, and PC Keith Palmer was stabbed whilst trying to stop the attacker getting into Parliament. Michael Smith, MBE, is a former Met police officer. He told John, "At such a difficult time, our thoughts shouldn't only be with the victims, but their families too."
Nobody really has any concept unless you've actually been there. What it's like to be the wife or the children that now receives that information that your dad or your mum is not coming home. When they only went to work, they went to work to do a job. They went to work to stand outside Parliament and, you know, perhaps greet people at the gate. And now, as a result, he's not coming home.
The so-called Islamic State terror group has claimed responsibility for the attack. In a statement through its own news agency, Daesh says the attacker was a soldier of the Islamic State. Earlier, Prime Minister Theresa May updated Parliament on what the information she could go public with about the attacker, including confirming he was British-born.
Some years ago, he was once investigated by MI5 in relation to concerns about violent extremism. He was a peripheral figure. The case is historic. He was not part of the current intelligence picture.
And in other news today, the funeral of Northern Ireland's former Deputy First Minister Martin McGuinness is taking place. Among those attending the service in Derry's Bogside are DUP leader Arlene Foster, the Irish President Michael D. Higgins and former US President Bill Clinton. The IRA commander turned peacemaker died on Tuesday, aged 66, from a rare heart condition.
Talk Radio National Weather.
A fine afternoon for most, though wind and some rain in the south with a chill. Tonight will be dry and cold for many with a widespread frost. That southern wind and rain hanging around. This afternoon's highs 13 degrees Celsius.
Toby, thank you very much. Toby with you throughout the afternoon, every half an hour, bringing you the latest, of course. This is Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio Sports Update.
I'm Van Fletcher. Good afternoon. A former England captain has told TalkSport that manager Gareth Southgate may have found the magic formula in experimenting with a back three against Germany last night. Burnley defender Michael Keane started alongside Chris Smalling and Gary Cahill in the 1-0 friendly defeat in Dortmund. Ex-skipper Terry Butcher reckons England looked comfortable playing 3-4-3.
England didn't have much time to get used to it, but they certainly looked as though they've been playing it for years. And I think with Chelsea playing a back three, it seems to be the fashion now that teams do that. It does suit England players, you're right.
After 9 years at the Hawthorns, Jonas Olsen's leaving West Bromwich Albion to return to Swedish football. The club agreed to mutually terminate the last few months of the defender's contract and allow him to join Djurgården IF. Olsen made 253 appearances for the Baggies, scoring 14 goals. Finally, cricket. Kent have appointed former Australian international Jason Gillespie as interim assistant coach. The ex-Yorkshire head coach will stand in for Alan Donald. Gillespie left his job at Headingley at the end of last season, having won back-to-back county championship titles there in 2014 and 15. That's the latest sports news powered by Talk Sport.
Talk Radio. John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Talk Radio. 8 minutes past 3 o'clock. I'm John Holmes. If you're just joining us, we're suspending normal programming. We're not doing what we normally do in the afternoons today. I didn't sort of feel right to do so, really, to be honest, given the event. So what we've been doing is talking about yesterday's attack. But I hope, if you've been listening in a slightly different way to how any of the other programmes have been tackling it, I think it's been quite interesting and we've learned a lot. We're about to do that now as well, I think, because earlier we spoke to David Baddiel, of course. Before that, Mandy Baker, who is a comedy writer and a BBC journalist wearing two hats on days like this. Steve Punt is with us. He's a writer, he's a performer. You may know him from many things. The Mary Whitehouse Experience, as mentioned, with David Baddiel. The Now Show on Radio 4. You know, we won't talk about that in detail. But it's on this week, and your job is to be funny this week.
Yes.
What do you do?
It happens regretfully regularly, really, and it's always difficult because the exact nuances of the event are always different. So there was an occasion about 10 years ago now, slightly more, when we actually had to record the show with no audience.
I remember, yes. This was 2005.
Yes, then. It was shortly after the tube bombings.
Yeah.
And and that was a difficult week as well, because there was no show for 10 days. And then we did the show, I think, 2 weeks after the London tube bombings. And actually, you felt like the audience were really, really wanting you to say something. That's kind of what's interesting, is that... comedy flips, I think, after things like this happen. It flips from being satirical to being morale boosting, and what people want of it is something slightly different.
We were saying this to David. It's like a pressure valve in a way, I think, and finding the right tone, because no one's laughing at the tragedy, but there is much to mock around the perpetrators of this kind of thing in many ways, and people do want some kind of pressure release.
Well, very often you find that the jokes are actually about the media coverage or the tweets or the quotes rather than the event itself. And because the interesting thing about comedy is that by the nature of what it is, it's the most democratic art form there is, because the audience is there. So they will tell you immediately if you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
If they don't like a joke, they won't laugh at it, or worse. You know, projectiles will start flying at the stage. And so you can be guided by the audience in terms of whether you've got it right or not. You definitely sense sometimes that there is a fear. There is that sort of blitz spirit, which always comes out whenever anything happens in London. There was a photo on Twitter within half an hour yesterday of a woman in the blitz sitting on a pile of rubble with a teacup. I don't know whether you saw that.
Yeah.
But that kind of thing is part of the thing that London always seems to like, that image. And incidentally, it's not to do with London. I think it happens in any city where this kind of thing happens. You get that sense of keeping calm and carrying on.
We were just talking to, just for the news there, what I wanted to do was get the point of view of someone that's not just directly connected to London, because I realise this feels very London-centric, because it's happening.
Well, it's happened, yeah, but it's happened all over,
but she's
obviously.
But she said something interesting, because she has a friend's family in Norfolk, which is where she's from, but she does work in London. And she said they do feel the same, because it's countrywide, but it's not the same as a Londoner perspective. Yet there is a connection, because, hey, we're all human beings, and that's you can't help but feel that connection. I think that's probably absolutely true, which is kind of the point you were making.
Yeah, well, I think as well... With the media means that everyone feels close to everyone else. There was a very strong sense in London of solidarity with New York after 9/11, and also with Paris after the two horrible atrocities there.
Yeah.
I was out of London. I was touring. I can't remember which particular tragedy it was, but there's a very odd feeling you get if you know somewhere well, and then something happens there when you're not there.
Yeah.
You know, you feel really, there's a very strange pull on you then. I guess in a big city, any big city, then there is more of that feeling of randomness.
Yeah.
There is more of that feeling that you could just be the person in the crowd. And that's one of the things I think people find really frightening.
The back to the sort of the comedy and how it's managed in a way, because, you know, it's our job in the sense of sort of writers and performers, and, you know, we do this every day. We've taken the decision today not to do the funny stuff that we ordinarily do every day, to do this kind of programme.
Yeah.
To see if we can tackle it in a slightly different way. And I think that's the right thing to do. But no one was talking about pulling the show or saying, no, John, you do funny stuff, you can't do. And I think it's interesting with you talking about how the Radio 4 Now show, because there are several layers of management at the BBC who make these decisions.
Yeah,
it's
and
not
to
up
honest,
to us.
To be honest, sometimes it's a lot easier if the decision is taken out of your hands.
Yeah.
In a way, it takes a massive weight off your shoulders if somewhere high up in management they go, sorry, we're pulling the show.
Yeah, because it happened to the Nightly Show last night, I think. I mean, that should have been pulled a long time ago. That's arguable. But I don't think they did it last night, I was hearing earlier. And
right.
Matt Ford had his Dave political show pulled.
Yeah,
I think as well. I think that's going out tonight. I think he tweeted that earlier. But in terms of the approaches, there's layers and layers of...
Well, there are. And also, the problem is you tend to get it from both sides. You can't get it right whatever you do, because if you go ahead, people say, oh, this is terrible. You shouldn't be making jokes when this terrible thing has happened. But if you cancel, people go, oh, this is terrible. The terrorists have won.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You should be out there standing up for free speech.
That's right. I think one of ISIS's main objectives, it's bring down the West, caliphate, take Mock the Week off the air. I think that's their third thing that they want. Well, you that's another interesting, because you write for Mock the Week as well.
Yeah.
I used to write for Mock the Week. And the approach to that, again, is different, is it, to do, when you're doing it for Radio 4, you're doing it for BBC 2? I mean, you know, what's the... What's the approach with things like... How do you mock a week in which...
Well, I guess there's a sense of whether a show carries the authority of the channel, if you see what I mean, or whether it has any sense of representing the views of the BBC, because then it becomes different.
Yeah.
And presenters are slightly different to guests, and, you know, an authored opinion piece is different to... an editorialised thing that represents the impartial voice of Auntie Bill. So, again, it's hard to give a hard and fast rule. And I think generally they seem to try and veer on the side of not actually cancelling things unless it's something really... Where clearly you have to. I mean, there are rules. You know,
yes.
If Royal dies or something,
yeah,
then everything stops.
Certainly Mock the Week would have to stop giving its track record with Royal jokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a special with Frankie Boyle.
But again, all that stuff is taken out of your hands,
yeah,
because that's all, you know, written in an office somewhere, and that just happens. What's harder is just the individual creative decisions on the ground where you kind of go, oh, I don't
How
know.
Do you find the line? Because, you know, you're...
Well, like I say, the audience helps.
Yeah.
Because...
But you have, before you write the joke, though, you've got a personal line in there. Where, and you know, I've been in writers' rooms, you've been in writers' rooms where a lot of horrible stuff comes out because that's human nature, which would never be broadcast. But then everyone's got to go, okay, is that fine or not fine? And on a personal level, how do you decide what's fine?
I think there is just an internal common sense clock somewhere that kind of... and not everyone's is set the same. Some people are more sensitive than others. But I think that... With experience, you just sort of get to know roughly where that line is. And every now and then you'll have an argument as to whether you're 6 inches to the left of it or 6 inches to the right of it.
Yeah.
But generally, you kind of know where that line is because it's a sort of common sense thing. It's exactly the same common sense whereby you would tell a joke to your friends in the pub that you wouldn't tell to your mum.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have an inbuilt sense of sort of guidance system that tells you what is acceptable in any given situation. So you mostly just rely on that and sort of thinking, well, would I laugh at that? Would I laugh at that if I was in company?
Yeah. Because that's a good point, actually, because people, you know, there is the sense, and I know the Now Show, you know, for Ready For It, is recorded in front of an audience, of course.
Yeah.
But people listening at home aren't experiencing it in the same way as a room is, and it's not a comedy club. It's radio can be a very solitary listen. And so targeting jokes that might work for a room might not work as they're broadcast, which is quite
I mean, that's the skill of that's the producer's skill, really, is to judge where sometimes something will work, you know, in the room, as they say.
Yeah.
But not sound great on air. And everyone's had experiences, I think, of that thing of getting carried away when you're in an audience. But you definitely laugh more when you're in an audience than if you're just in your kitchen, unless you're a very odd person, possibly. Given to sudden rounds of applause when you're listening to something on your own. It is always difficult. And in a way, I think that cancelling stuff, in a way, that is the easy... that's the easy way out.
Yeah.
You know, to put on a repeat of... of LOLO or something. I mean, that's the easy way out. That's kind of the coward's way out. The difficult thing is trying to find that line of saying no. People want something said, and they don't want life to be too badly affected. They don't want to feel like this thing has got on top of us.
Mm.
But that's the sort of quandary you've got, really, of not wanting to look like you are retreating in the face of terrorism, but at the same time, not wanting to look like you're just being flippant about it.
Yeah, it is a fine line. And you're on air on Friday.
Yeah, but that's the other thing, is that the news agenda does move on very quickly, and sometimes you can feel like something. I mean, I remember. I remember having a lot of conversations after 9/11 of will we ever be able to be funny about this, and you know, and someone saying, oh, there'll be a film about it in 5 years, and everyone going, no, there'll never be a film about this, and of course there was a film about it.
Well, like you mentioned, LOLO. I mean, but, you know, you go, sorry, we're making humour out
well,
of the
Well, we once,
Nazis.
Actually, we once on the Now Show tried to construct a definitive list of what you can do when, you know, and after 2 years, you can do a serious drama. And then after 5 years, you can mention it in a soap opera. After 20 years, you can make a comedy about it.
Yeah.
And
it is
kind of amazing. But it happens all the time. If you look at the Iraq War, you know, the first things that were done about it were serious dramas.
Yeah.
And then, sure enough, there was a comedy about it eventually.
Yeah.
So it is...
Tragedy plus time.
Tragedy plus time,
as our own Bob Mills does at the weekend.
Although you will occasionally find somebody, one of the guests on the show, made a joke about. It wasn't really a joke, but a reference to John Lennon being shot on the show in a different context, and got a resounding ooh from the audience, and was able to do the. Too soon thing. But you will still get that.
Yeah.
You know, Lennon, Princess Diana, people are still very, very sensitive about those things.
Look, we're out of time, but thanks for talking us through that. I think it's interesting stuff, all of that. The Now Show's on Radio 4, but I'm not going to plug it because, you know, I'm not allowed on it anymore, Steve.
I can't get involved in this.
But, and but Steve's talking with us of for difficult, another hour talking about that.
Talking of difficult editorial decisions.
All right. Yeah. By the way, update, still no terrorists have called in. I have said this afternoon that if you are a terrorist and listening to this and you think that driving a car across a bridge, killing people and stabbing policemen is a good idea, why don't you have the balls to call us and tell us exactly why? Because I'm telling you now, it ain't going to bring down the West and it ain't going to start a caliphate. It's not even going to stop Mock the Week, all right? So 0344 499 1000, and you're not a lone wolf, remember, you are a lone arsehole. But I would ask you to call in if you've got the balls to do so. That's the number. Now, Steve, thank you very much
thank you
for joining us. In the next bit of the programme, I don't want to upstage you, Steve, but Ken Livingstone.
Well,
I know. There you
I
go.
I know my place.
Yeah. We'll be joining us between 3.30 and 4. It's Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio. Listen. Phone. Talk.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Taking care of business on Talk Radio with Exporting is great. If you're a small or medium-sized business owner, you can't afford to miss Talk Radio's expert guide to exporting. From market research to resource management, logistics to local lingo, get essential advice on expanding your product or services overseas. Taking care of business on the Paul Ross Full Set Breakfast on Talk Radio. Take the next step towards exporting. Visit great.gov.uk. The demand is out there. You should be too.
The new TradePoint catalogue is out now, with a huge range of trade products and brands at low trade prices. Grab a copy for your van in one of our 290 stores nationwide today. TradePoint. Trade brands. Trade prices. Trade only.
TradePoint! Introducing Domino's new walk-in wins. Buy one, get one free. Any size pizza at any time when you pop in store. And with Click and Collect, your order's raring to go when you arrive. Two delicious Domino's pizzas for the price of one with new walk-in wins. So just strut in, save time and bog off. Participating stores subject to availability. See dominoes.co.uk.
Have I got PPI?
Want to know if you've had PPI? Find out with our free PPI check.
The team at Stanton Fisher recently claimed back over £4,500 for me. This money was invaluable, as I'd been out of work for a little while, and it gave me some breathing space. I did very little, and I got some money back. It was awesome.
So text CHECK to 80800 for your free PPI check.
Have I got PPI.com?
That's CHECK to 80800.
Did you know premium bonds have been around for 60 years? I recently won £100 in the monthly prize draw. I was off to the bank to deposit my prize warrant when my granddad came over. You know you can do all that online nowadays, he chuckled. And he was right. I now manage my premium bonds online, and I've chosen to have my winnings paid straight into my bank account. It's so much faster. You can too by visiting nsandi.com. Premium bonds. Making people smile for 60 years.
Don't miss our trade-exclusive, one-week-only catalogue launch deals, like 10% off all tiling, flooring and Leyland trade paint. See in-store or online for more. Hurry, offers end Sunday 26th of March. TradePoint, trade brands, trade prices, trade only.
TradePoint! Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
The M6 at the moment, southbound, we've got one lane closed off due to a broken down vehicle between Junction 3 and Junction 4. Traffic's doing okay though. The M60 going clockwise, Greater Manchester, we've got on the exit slip road a broken down lorry at Junction 10. The M6 northbound, two lanes are closed off. It's due to an accident. Lorry and two cars involved between Junction 5 and 6, causing some congestion now all the way back to Junction 4, adding about 40 minutes to your journey. I'm Poonam Verma.
Your business is growing. Fantastic. But you need to hire fast. Enter Indeed.com, already used by over 3 million businesses for hiring. And with more people in the UK using Indeed than any other job site, you'll find more great candidates and sooner on Indeed. Find your next hire on the world's number one job site, Indeed.com. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. World's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
It is Talk Radio. Good afternoon. I am John Holmes. A normal programming suspended, as I say, as we did really in this hour yesterday. We were on air as the news broke, of course, of the atrocities on the Westminster Bridge and at the Palace of Westminster. And we are doing it again today in many ways because we figured it felt a little bit inappropriate to do our usual, as Julie Hartley would call it, nonsense, for 3 hours today. So we are tackling the story and its aftermath in a way I hope you're finding informative. That was Steve Punt as well, talking about how difficult it is to write comedy in these circumstances. Ken Livingston joining us in the next half an hour on the programme as well. He was Mayor of London, of course, during the 2005 terror attacks. It'd be interesting to get his take on that. We've been talking a lot about rolling news as well this afternoon and whether it's worth it, whether it's relevant in the days of social media, given that a lot of its imagery tends to come from social media. In the first place, Professor Liz Howell is on the phone. She's Director of Broadcasting at City University in London. Good afternoon, Professor Liz.
Hello.
Hello, thank you for joining us. Rolling news, we've talked about it a little bit today. And I wanted to get your take on it as well, because it's a lot of the time, not necessarily now, although I'll have to say there is a bit of it, a lot of the time it's just repeating the same thing over and over again repetitively because nothing has actually happened and there's a hell of a lot of speculation and reporters flailing
John,
in the wind.
You're a fine one to talk. I mean, that's exactly what you're doing.
I know! Program. I'm part of it!
When there's a big story, nobody really does want to talk about anything else and they do want to go over it over and over again. I mean, I was actually in Westminster yesterday at 2:35. At 2:35, I went down into the tube station and probably got the last tube out.
Yeah.
And when I arrived back at work at 3 o'clock for a meeting with students, everyone was gathered around the monitor in the reception area going, oh my God. And I thought, I was there like 20 minutes ago, what's going on? These are stories which really take over your life, and they're so big, and everybody's got an involvement and everyone wants to talk about it, and rolling news is incredibly important for catching up. I then had lots of things to do during the day. I got back home like 8 o'clock at night. First thing I do is go to rolling news. I don't go to social media because I love social media. Everyone loves it, but it's only social media.
Yeah.
I go to rolling news because there is an editorial gateway. My trust may be limited, but it's better than my trust in, you know, Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important.
Do you think sorry to interrupt, I was just going to say,
Please interrupt.
Do you think, yes, I'll speculate some more. Do you think people, though, will go to social media first a lot of the time?
Of course they will.
And don't care about it being verified because it's just part of that rolling tapestry
The way I look at it is like social media is the equivalent years ago of the phone call. You can say what you like and feel what you like and you can say it on the phone, but that's not what you trust. The phone is when your mate rings up and tells you your boyfriend's going out with someone else, okay? The facts are different. And so social media is just that gossipy stuff, and then you go to the rolling news or the news outlet for something you trust. Even so, it's difficult. I mean, trust is relative. I mean, we can't expect rolling news to be absolutely right because it's rolling, but it's going to give you more of the facts. And I don't mind the repetitive nature of it. I will sit there and watch it three times before I get fed up.
Yeah.
The third time, I realise they're not going to update, so I go away, do something else, and I come back
and it's updated. It's interesting, just as you're speaking, actually, we have a screen in here with rolling news, or several, actually, but, you know, the terror attack, of course, is still going on. But you get a sense of relief now that they've been able to swap to Martin McGuinness's funeral in Derry.
Totally, because you know...
Because it's, something else to talk about. Yeah.
It's a contained event when that happens. Actually, I got that feeling around about 11 o'clock last night, and I have to say, I thought that the Assistant Chief Commissioner Rowley was absolutely excellent, and he really sort of nailed it. And it was interesting. I went to bed like maybe having watched everything till about 11:30 last night, woke up and put the news on at 6:30, 7:30, and it was the same. And that gave me great consolation that there hadn't been some huge breaking extension of this overnight. It was a contained event. But I needed my rolling news to confirm that for me.
Speaking of confirming, we're just getting breaking news that the police have named the attacker. Khalid Massoud is the name. The police have finally given that name out. In the last couple of minutes, which, again, there we go. See, rolling news. I'm bringing you something that's just happened.
And you're not going to get that. Well, you are going to get it on Facebook. You're not going to believe it. The stuff I get on Facebook, you really wouldn't believe. So this, you need to go to something that's... a little bit more trustworthy. And I think the idea that you have absolute complete trust, nobody has complete trust in anyone, particularly in partners or whatever.
Yeah.
So trust is a very relative term. But you trust some outlets more than others. And I would trust my Rolling News more than my...
Okay. I just very quickly mentioned as well, we've got to go to the news now, but in terms of just Channel 4, of course, had to backtrack attacker last night.
That's not false news, and that's not Rolling News. That's just a mistake.
Okay. Thanks for talking to us. That's Professor Liz Howell, Director of Broadcasting at City University. The police have named the attacker. Toby will have details of that for you. Now, we'll talk to Ken Livingstone next on Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio.
Thank you. Yes, as John just mentioned there, we do have the breaking news. The man police believe to be responsible for the terrorist attack in Westminster yesterday has been formally identified. Scotland Yard say he is 52-year-old Khalid Massoud. We will bring you more on that as we get it. In the meantime, the fourth person killed in the attack was a US tourist from Utah who was on a tour of Europe celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary. 54-year-old Kurt Cochran was hit by the car on Westminster Bridge's southern end and died of his injuries. His wife, Melissa Payne Cochran, was also seriously injured but will recover from hers. US President Donald Trump has paid tribute to Mr. Cochran, describing him as a great American. Meanwhile, a crowdfunding page to raise money for the family of PC Keith Palmer has raised £85,000. The police officer was stabbed to death trying to stop the attacker getting into Parliament. Policing Minister Brandon Lewis says people should feel proud of the country's officers.
We owe a huge debt to every single officer for what they put themselves to every single day to keep us safe. I spend time with armed officers, I've been particularly with some in the last couple of weeks, seeing the specialist training they do and the work they go to, and we owe them a huge debt of thanks and their family for that.
The Islamic State group says it inspired yesterday's attack. They provided no evidence. Eight people remain in custody after being arrested in overnight raids in London and Birmingham. And just a reminder, in the last few moments, Scotland Yard has identified the man believed to be responsible for the terrorist attack yesterday as 52-year-old Khalid Massoud. Meanwhile, a similar type of attack has been followed in Antwerp today. Police say a driver was stopped as he tried to drive into a crowd at high speed in one of the busiest shopping streets in the Belgian city. In other news today, a former MP who defected from the Conservatives to UKIP has been charged with electoral fraud. Bob Spink became the party's first Member of Parliament in 2008 before losing his seat 2 years later. Mr. Spink and an aide, 38-year-old James Parkin, are accused of submitting false signatures on nomination papers and will appear in court next month. Now here's your weather. A fine afternoon for most. Wind and some rain in the south, though, with a chill. Tonight will be dry and cold for many, with a widespread frost. That southern wind and rain hanging around. This afternoon's highs, though, 13 Celsius.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Talk Radio in the afternoons. Good afternoon. I am John Holmes. We are suspending our normal programming, what we would ordinarily bring you in the afternoons between 1 and 4, as we are continuing to talk about the events of yesterday and indeed the aftermath. Joining me now, very pleased to welcome, first time I've met him actually, Ken Livingstone. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I mean, it's just, I reckon since the attacks yesterday, I must have had about 100 phone calls and texts from journalists and radio and TV. It's just been one interview after another. It's when you're mayor and you've got a whole staff like that, I mean, it's easy to manage, but when you're basically just
the ex-mayor,
retired house husband, fitting it all in has been a nightmare. But
Well, we appreciate your time. Yeah, thank you.
It's useful to get out there and tell people, you know, I mean, what they need to hear, which is that we shouldn't allow terrorist attacks to change our way of life.
Indeed. And I mean, the experience you can bring to this as well, of course. Was it eight years you were mayor?
I was 8 years in. The terrorist attacks were in 2005. And it was a nightmare for me because I was on the other side of the world, because we were having a Singapore meeting to decide which city was going to get the Olympic Games.
Okay.
And I woke up the next morning and I get a phone call saying, you know, from my press officer saying there's been a terrorist attack on the underground, and I just so wanted to get back. And the police in Singapore, I mean, just shut the whole area down because they were worried there might be an attack on, because it wasn't just me there. There were, I mean, celebrities from all over the world had come from five great cities.
Yeah.
And then drove me to the airport. We got on the plane, it broke down. And so I had to wait overnight for another plane could take off. And I just wanted to be back in London.
And that would have been before the social media as it is now, in terms of getting in contact with the people back in London. Was it just a series of phone calls, I suppose, and email?
The only decision I had to take while I was in Singapore was, should the tube open the next day or should we have a quiet day or two before it came back on? And because after 9/11, we'd started planning, because we knew, we were involved in Iraq and Afghanistan, we knew that we were a terrorist target. But we always planned it on the assumption that the mayor and the Metropolitan Commissioner of Police had been killed in the first wave of attacks. Right. So what we had was a devolved structure. And so a lot of people relatively junior knew what they had to do. They rushed out and they did it quick. And we've still got that sort of system. It doesn't all wait for someone high up to start responding.
I guess that it has to be in place doesn't it?
Because literally, the mayor, the commissioner of police are obviously key targets. If they can get you, they're going to do that. And one of the things I was most moving was that, as the attacks happened, the cleaning staff on the underground were just checking out to go home. And lots of them went back in and took water down to the people who'd been victims of the attack and so on. And they just sat there and held their hands and so on until the ambulances came. It was amazing. Real courage.
And how detached did you actually feel? Physically you were, of course, but mentally, how did you cope with it?
It was, it's just so frustrating. It was when I got back to London. The police whisked me off the plane and I was driven round to, the Commissioner of Police and all of that, and then taken round to hospitals where victims were. And one of my staff had a leg blown off. And I just found it was so difficult to keep control of your emotions. Remember the speech I made in Singapore, and it's quite clear when you look at it, I'm just about getting through that.
Yes.
Because, it's so horrific. And, literally, but when you're running something, you've got to keep in control and all of that. But when you just see so many people have been killed and so many people terribly injured, it is pretty overwhelming.
And Sadiq Khan will be feeling very similar, I'm sure. How do you prepare? Because it comes down to the fact that you're not responsible in that sense, but you must have a sense of responsibility because you are in charge of that city.
And the mayor's job is to hold it together. And that was the key thing. What I'm really proud of is that, if you go back to 9/11, after the Twin Towers attack, there was a poor, he was a Sikh taxi driver down in southwest London, and he was savagely beaten up by people who just assumed he was a Muslim.
Yeah.
And I think he was permanently disabled. And we all worried that with the attack like this, you could get a wave of hate crime and so on. But the police didn't record a single instance of a Muslim being assaulted or even shouted at or anyone daubing a mosque. Londoners knew that, they're not stupid, they knew that the terrorists wanted to divide us, and it didn't happen. And really, whether it's the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, or the Prime Minister, or every other politician, you've got to make that case. Don't let them divide us. That's what they want.
Are there people, though, because we hear of, not in the instance you're talking about, but certainly we've heard of so-called tit-for-tat attacks after the Joe Cox murder, there was racial hatred and that kind of thing. It does happen now, it seems, more than it did back in 2005. Is that part, do you think, of a faction of people who deliberately want some division in society, or is it just a human nature thing, or just where we are now in society?
I think some of our papers have pandered a bit to Islamophobia and demonised all Muslims. Some politicians, I think, have talked about this being a Muslim problem. It isn't. Every religion has a small fanatical wing.
Yeah.
The police here in Britain, they're not just monitoring Muslims, they're monitoring far-right groups, basically angry white men, who are assembling, guns and planning an attack. But you never really hear about that in the media. Because even when they go on trial, we catch them, we put them on trial, it's a little bit buried away in the middle of the paper.
Yeah.
Some of our worst papers for decades have always promoted some sort of form of racism and anger. Back in 1906, there was a Daily Mail headline that said, "Jews bring crime and disease to Britain." After that, it was the Irish, then it was the Caribbean.
They haven't really moved on, to be honest with you.
And that clearly... some people believe what they read in the paper. I hope not too many.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's all about it's a business, isn't it? They've got it, and they're preaching to what the converted already. In that sense, you know, newspapers have their readers.
Simple fact: people who've come to Britain or to London, they don't come here to bring Sharia law. They're leaving that behind. They want their kids to grow up in a world which is open and free. The demonising of any minority is a great mistake.
Ken, stay there if you would, because we will be talking more with you in the next bit of the programme. We've got to take a break. Now you're listening to Talk Radio in the afternoon, suspending normal programming. We're talking to Ken Livingstone, former Mayor of London, of course. It's Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A new kind of talk radio. We'll get you talking.
Do you dream of being part of a more exciting fleet?
Where to, mate?
Spending your spare time with an interesting new crew. If you've got ambitions that go beyond the everyday, listen to the Paul Russ Full Set Breakfast on Talk Radio and learn more about serving in the Royal Navy Reserve. Develop new skills, expand your horizons, and experience challenges and opportunities you won't find in your day job. The Paul Russ Full Set Breakfast tomorrow morning from 6 on Talk Radio. Don't do the everyday every day. Search Royal Navy Reserve.
And it's all change in the new season of Formula One on Channel 4. With new rules, faster cars, wider tyres, louder engines, fresh rivalries, quicker laps and closer races.
Race into the unknown. Formula One starts this weekend on Channel 4.
eBay has every kind of part to help your car pass its MOT.
Son, come and have a look at the car. There's a few things I've fixed ahead of its MOT. I've topped up the washer bottle.
Screen wash.
I've replaced the wipers.
Windscreen wipers.
I've sorted the indicators.
Light bulbs.
And press that.
Horns. Shop eBay's unbeatable selection of parts and accessories to help you get your car MOT ready. The ultimate pass your MOT first time shop.
When you're building a great business, only one thing really matters. People. And for the best people, you need the job site used by more UK candidates than any other. Find your people today at Indeed.com. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
Will City nick it at the death? Will the big man bag another brace? Will the midfield maestro get a straight red? For kicking a ball boy? What are the odds of that? If you reckon you know where a game's heading, bet in play at 10bet.co.uk. You'll get a first deposit bonus of up to £200. And with hundreds of in-play betting markets, when it's time to bet, it's time to 10bet.
Minimum deposit £15. Deposit must be staked in full to qualify. 5 rollovers of deposit and bonus required. Single bets and ACCAs only. Please bet responsibly.
Hungry citizens of Britain! With Just Eat, the food you really want is just a tap away. So picture that perfect pizza. Set your sights on a classic curry. Say, why the heck not, the sweet and sour chicken? Then fire up the Just Eat app. For tonight, we feast like kings. Your favourite local restaurants are standing by. Download the Just Eat app or go online to order now.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
Well, the M6 northbound, we've got one lane closed off due to an accident northbound between junction 5 and 6 with long delays back to junction 4 at the moment. That's adding about 40 minutes onto people's journey. Through Bristol, the M4 eastbound is slow between junction 20 and 19, and the M6 northbound through Lancashire got a lane closed on the exit slip road. It's due to an oil spillage just at junction 29, but traffic seems to be coping fairly well. I'm Poonam Verma.
Writing job descriptions, managing candidates, setting up interviews, hiring's hard. But Indeed.com makes it easy. Post your job, organise candidates, schedule interviews. All on the UK's number one job site. And with more people in the UK using Indeed than any other job site, easy works. Find your next hire at Indeed.com today. Terms, conditions, quality standards and usage limits apply. UK's number one job site based on total unique visitors to Indeed.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon, it is Talk Radio. I am John Holmes and we are suspending normal programming today, of course, to bring you coverage of the Westminster terror attack and the fallout for it. We're talking to Ken Livingstone in the studio this afternoon. In terms of London yesterday and today, of course, and having been there yourself, 24 hours later, which is where we are, what's Sadiq Khan doing now?
Oh, he's doing exactly the right thing. I mean, the really good news is that last week, early this week, I can't remember now, Sadiq Khan announced he's bringing back neighbourhood police patrols. Well, I introduced those when I was mayor, but Boris basically wound them down as making cuts in the police budget.
Yeah.
And people get used to seeing the same officers patrolling their street. They get to know them. They'll stop them and say, I'm worried about what the guy in 52 is doing. And it's a great way of collecting information. Because a person who's worried about what the guy in 52 is doing isn't going to pick up the phone and say, can I speak to counter-terrorism? But they will chat to a copper they know.
And was that effective? I mean,
very effective. Yeah. We got lots more information. But also, crime rates went down. In each of the wards, we had 620 wards in London. As we rolled these out, the crime rate fell because kids growing up, and when I was a kid growing up in London, there was always a copper coming around the street.
Yeah.
If you were caught, you know, scumping someone's apples out of their garden or just playing some silly bit of nonsense, the police would stop you. You grew up knowing the police would catch you. But then when all the police were stuck in Z cars and things like that. I mean, kids grew up, they could do all sorts of terrible things. They never got caught. And often they'd actually be, you know, serious criminals in their 30s before the police actually ever caught them for anything.
Right.
Patrols are crucial. A police force that's in contact daily with the public is so important.
And also, as, you know, with the sad death of Keith Palmer yesterday, the training, I suppose, that police have to go through now is way removed from back when, you know, you were a kid or I was a kid. It is a different world, isn't it? So how do we do both of those things with limited budgets?
Well, basically, about the only public spending that the government hasn't cut has been counter-terrorism units. I mean, because that would just be so devastating if it leaked out that, well, we've had a terrorist attack, but unfortunately we haven't got enough staff to deal with it. The staff are there. And it's, I mean, literally, about three times a year, the counter-terrorism unit intervenes and catches a group or a couple of people that are planning something. And that's pretty, you know, pretty much for the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. It's three or four cases a year. So they are incredibly effective. But if what you've got, and I suspect this is the situation we had yesterday, some individual, a loner, perhaps with psychological problems, sitting angry in their room, planning something. Unless they're linked into a terrorist organisation, you can't monitor them, you can't pick it up on the internet or anything like that.
Yeah, but we learn now, don't we, that this guy was on the radar. He was on the radar, I think, links to extremism, certainly. So it makes you wonder why he possibly wasn't being watched.
An awful lot of people are linked in. That doesn't mean to say they're going to do something. But there's an awful lot of people picked up, questioned, and, I mean, the counter-terrorism unit take the decision. They're fantasising, but they're not actually going to be a real threat. But you're always going to get, you know, one gets through occasionally. We had that with the killing of Lee Rigby.
Yeah.
This is the thing. You're much more likely to be killed in London just crossing the road than by terrorists, and we shouldn't allow, because the media, it's a huge event, it'll dominate, it's all around the world.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact. I mean, you're more likely to kill yourself by drinking too much or smoking. This is not a threat that's going to impinge on everybody's life all the time.
Yeah.
It will be an occasional tragedy when one breaks through, but it's not something that should, you know, dominate the way. I mean, we live in our lives. Carry on going out to the cinema, going out to the pub, doing your shopping. Don't allow them to change your life.
Londoners sort of do. Well, I say Londoners, I think people sort of do, actually, broadly, don't they?
Well, the shock of the terrorist attacks back in 2005, when I got back to London, on the tube you'd notice people were really down. They were worried, because that was a pretty massive attack. But then I think back to my parents' generation. I mean, every night the Nazis were bombing London and killing sometimes hundreds of Londoners. It didn't break the will of Londoners. I mean, we carried on until we defeated Nazism. And I don't think any number of terrorist attacks is going to change the way we live.
Yeah. And in terms of where we go now, it's, I suppose, more We've already seen concrete barriers being brought in today, of course, and we've been talking a lot. I mean, interestingly, where we go now, and you mentioned the media, and I think that is an interesting point, because are we, and we've been asking this question today, are we fueling the oxygen of their publicity? Because they're not going to achieve their aims by doing this, but what they are going to get is coverage. So are we, you know, are you falling into the trap of going, well, this is what they want us to be doing?
As long as we can get the right message across. I mean, it would be a disaster if the media was all pumping up, you know, hysteria and hatred and that. We're not doing that. I think everything I've seen on radio or television or read in the papers has been actually quite balanced and reasonable. But the key thing in all of this is that you just need to prepare people so that they understand and they don't turn on each other. I mean, when something like this happens.
And very quickly, I don't know whether you, and I'm sure you have seen it, the tweet from Donald Trump Jr. Quoting Sadiq Khan in an interview some years ago. Yep. What did you make
completely of it? Completely out of context.
Yep.
this is what's wrong with the media. So often stuff gets repeated. It's fake news. People need to check it. I mean, a year ago, there's all that stuff screaming in the media that I'd said Hitler was a Zionist. Well,
yes.
If I said Hitler was a Zionist, I wouldn't just apologise. I'd go to the doctor and check I wasn't in stage of dementia.
So what did you say then? And why was it interpreted?
I was asked a question about Hitler doing a radio interview. I dismissed it in about 30 words. I just pointed out there were two phases. In 1933, the Nazis signed a deal with the German Zionists to move German Jews out to Palestine. And, you know, that's history. We all know that. But then there's all these Labour MPs tweeting I was a Nazi apologist and screaming I said Hitler was a Zionist. And the Jewish Chronicle had about six articles on their website. All of them said I said it was a Zionist. And when we had the anti-Semitism inquiry at the House of Commons, the president of the Board of Deputies of British Jews was on first, and he said, for Ken Living to say Hitler was a Zionist is deeply offensive and should apologise. Well, I don't think the president of the Board of Deputies was deliberately lying. A lot of people out there believed it because they'd heard it on the media.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, fake news is becoming more of a problem. I think we've got to find a way. I think no politician should simply retweet something until they've checked if it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, literally was just pulling in there.
But you're right about the Zionist thing. I think that is an interesting point because that's the headline, isn't it? And it's a case of going, all right, well, Ken Livingston said that, and now you're saying, obviously, you didn't say that.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because that I suspended by the Labour Party. It's taken them 11 months to plan the hearings. I mean, you'll be reporting it next week, no doubt. It's on Thursday and Friday. Yeah.
Did no one go back and listen to actually what you said? Well, because it was on the radio, so you presume someone had...
What was amazing, in the weeks after my suspension, which that was front page news, I couldn't walk down the street without people saying, we know it's true, don't these MPs read history? And sadly, a lot of them don't. But, you know, the annoying thing is, when the Labour Party hearing takes place next Thursday and Friday, press and public are barred. They're not allowed in. It's like, this isn't North Korea, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you won't be able to get a reporter in to cover it. It's outrageous.
Yeah. And we should also touch on, speaking as Labour Party as we are, because obviously we've been commenting on Corbyn in the past few days, so we should touch on that briefly. I mean, he is a man, I think, that most people think he's unelectable, certainly in current form. And you've been saying, calling for the suspension of certain MPs. Where is the Labour Party now, Ken?
Well, I mean, it's getting this wave of dishonest reporting mainly to talk. I mean, four billionaires own three quarters of the papers we read. They dread the idea that Corbyn might become Prime Minister and stop them laundering all their money through tax havens abroad. Because literally, these people, fabulously wealthy, they don't pay their fair share tax. And one of Jeremy's two big policies, one is a big programme of investment, which is modernise our roads, our railways and all of that. But the other is to crack down on Google and Starbucks and all the others and make sure they pay their fair share of tax.
Yeah.
Then we can expand our service. We can have more teachers. I mean, we don't know how much tax avoidance there is. The government claims it's only $20 billion a year, but some estimates have put it up to $150 billion.
Yeah.
Well, that's a quarter of the government's budget. And now, do you ever hear that reported about, Jim? No, is he going to wear a white poppy? Is he going to bow to the Queen? It's always trivia.
It is interesting. The broad view is, of course, the Labour Party are unelectable under Corbyn. That is a broad view. And so what you're saying is that isn't the case. That is just essentially the media's agenda.
We've got to get these policies fingers crossed. We've got to focus on them. Most Labour MPs have stopped undermining Jeremy now because they know they can't get rid of him.
Yeah, well, they tried, of course.
Oh, they did. You see, when I became leader of the GLC, and I had a similar wave of lies and smears, after 5 months, my poll rating was 18%. But, you know, 3 years later, Thatcher had to abolish the GLC election because we were heading towards winning 90% of the seats. Yeah. And Jeremy's like me. He doesn't give in. He doesn't change his policy because the media don't like it. And I think when you hit the general election, and the big thing there is the debates on television and radio, where people, you know, will be able to see what Jeremy's actually saying about how to build our economy again. Because a lot of the reason people voted for Brexit or in America for Trump is working class people have lost the good jobs they used to have. I grew up in a world, I left school in Brixton, only about one kid in 20 went to university, but every kid got a job.
Yeah.
And that job paid enough to keep a family. Now, people on zero-hours contracts, they're working all the hours God sends. All the wealth that's been created in the last 35 years in the West has gone to a small elite. And that's got to stop. People like Jeremy are a real threat to that elite. They don't like it. Yeah. They will be spending a lot of money to stop him.
Yeah. Has he got any newts?
No, he does a nice bit of gardening. He's got a, he grows his own vegetables.
Good. Listen, we're out of time, Ken. Ken Livingston, former Mayor of London, of course, former MP. Pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for coming in. Very enlightening. You're listening to Talk Radio in the afternoons. We are suspending normal programming. You'll be aware of that by now if you've been listening, because of yesterday's events. Sam Delaney up with you from 4 o'clock this afternoon. You're listening to Talk Radio. I'm John Holmes, and I thought we'd get away with
John
that.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
I just said that I thought we'd get away without him mentioning Hitler, but
he mentioned Hitler. He'll do that.
Hitler. Sam is
it's part of his rider when he comes in.
Could you make sure we do mention the Hitler?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Right. Well, we've been doing quite an interesting show today. Probably like the one you always do instead of the rubbish we normally peddle. But you know, it's been quite enlightening. A lot of different subjects. What are you doing with
well,
it?
Well, obviously, there's only one story in town. We're going to be joined by a range of people with different perspectives on this. First up, Jonathan Friedland from The Guardian, who has written an interesting column today about the way in which this kind of story might actually make people think about Westminster in a less negative way. Mm. When you see the kind of human face of all the people that work there, it's not just a kind of a corrupt political elite as people would assume. And actually, there's, you know, a lot of people have been affected by this. It might actually improve people's perspective of that part of the country. Mohammed Shafiq is the chief executive of Ramadan Foundation, who tried to fight extremism in the Muslim community. Dave Hill is the Guardian's London editor and also editor of On London. He'll be here doing our trending review. Charlie Beckett from the London School of Economics was stuck in Portcullis House, which is the offices across the street from the bridge, yesterday. He'll be telling us about his experiences there, but also about the fascinating way in which this story was basically told first and foremost on social media before, you know, traditional media, certainly the papers. I mean, of course, we were actually right across it here because that's the great thing about being on radio.
We were on air, I think it was 3:15, and we just changed what we normally do and went straight with it live. So,
yeah, so it's interesting now the way in which these stories unfold very quickly across a number of different platforms. He'll be talking to us about that. So basically, we've got a packed show, and there'll only be one subject in it, I'm sure.
Okay, Sam Delaney with you from 4. We hope you've enjoyed the slightly unusual show that we've done this afternoon, and we brought you a wide range of interesting ways to tackle the issue. I can tell you with some certainty, though I said earlier, if you are a terrorist and you're listening, why not give us a call if you've got any balls at all? Because frankly, driving a car across a bridge and stabbing a policeman isn't going to do anything, is it? It's not going to bring down the West. It's not going to put a caliphate across the world. It's not even going to stop next week's episode of Mock the Week. Basically, you achieve nothing, and you're not a lone wolf, you're a lone arsehole. Good afternoon.
Talk Radio. Dial up some dialogue.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.